Ryan Noonan is playing on the radio, baby.
Good morning, Americans. It's Friday.
Holy s***! Ryan's back!
Bullet.
All right, that's better. Who's messing with the buttons? Is that me? Me? I messed with the buttons? Well, we'll just talk over the Colin James Little Big Band. I don't know what happened. Tom's yelling at me, go, go, go. Listen, I don't respond well to threats. You know that. Hi, good morning. Welcome. Did you have a good 4th of July? I did till about a minute and a half ago. It's Brian Noonan in for Nick D on 720 WGN. Oh, my goodness. A big show planned. Hopefully it'll go a little smoother. That's why we had to start over. After last night's Gallagher debacle, as it will from now on be known, we couldn't just go off that way. Big show, like I said, we want you to get involved. 312-981-7200. That is the phone number. That is the text number. If you choose to call in, you will be talking to Tom Hush. He is the executive producer of the Nick DiGilio Show, and I am happy to have him here with me. If you're nice to him, you get to me. That's how that works. You can keep in touch with me also on social media. It's Brian Noonan Show on Facebook and Twitter. In just a few minutes, we are going to be talking to the author of a brand new book called Lost Restaurants of Chicago. Greg Borzo will join me. We'll talk about the great restaurants that have come and gone in this city. We welcome your feedback on that as well. We're also going to bring back the Overnight Arcade. That's right at 2 o'clock. Oh, the arcade opens up. Some American history will be talked about. Then I will talk to Sonia O'Sullivan, who is a four-time Olympian for Ireland. She won the silver medal in Sydney, and she was in Chicago and is coming to Chicago in the fall for a joint breast cancer awareness run, the Great Pink Run. So we'll learn all about that, talk about whether fireworks should finally be legalized in Illinois, and a whole lot more, as was last night. You never know what you're going to get when you turn on the radio here. But if you've been listening to the news or following Twitter or anything, you know tonight was the big fireworks display at Navy Pier. The weather worked out perfectly. Everything seemed to be going well. Then at the end of the show, violence breaks out. Early reports are that three people were stabbed. There was a report that somebody was shot. That person actually, according to the Tribune, suffered a puncture wound from an overturned table. People were fleeing after this. Amy Guth from WGN was there. She was out hobnobbing, enjoying her 4th of July celebrations. And then all of this happened. Amy joins us now. Hi, Amy.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
I am well. Thanks for staying up late. I know you were. I heard bits and pieces when you called in earlier, right after this happened. So what were you doing there? Obviously watching the fireworks, but were you in the grounds? What was going on?
So I was with a group, and we were out on a boat, and so we missed this particular thing. But after it happened, the staff of the boat was quite calm about the whole thing and really keeping everybody calm, brought us back to Navy Pier, where we were immediately taken out of the pier. That was made very clear. There was a huge police presence, even some, you know, like military presence, and a couple of people marked as FBI, and they really quickly got us out of there. In our group, we had checked a stroller at dockside prior to getting on the boat. That was swept up in the chaos. That was gone, and we started, you know, we had two small children with us and started asking questions, and quickly we were told that that was documented as evidence, and it was being cataloged, and it would be available at possibly as early as tomorrow morning, but we would have to check back in the morning to find out about that. But really, that entire area was really locked down. And I would say, coming into the pier, you know, bags were being searched, metal detectors were, sure, you know, everybody was getting checked on the way in. So really, really tight security and noticeable police presence on the way in. And so, you know, once this started happening, the thing that really sticks out to me was on the way out of the pier, as we were kind of being swept out from the boat to the exit, was there was so much chaos. You could see how much chaos was left behind. There were tons of shoes, there were purses, eyeglasses, half-eaten meals, drinks, bags. Just quickly, a lot of people were just pushed out of the area really, really quickly. And that was, you know, I mean, it was stark. It was a tense feeling with that heavy of a police presence. Yeah.
Well, and there have also been preliminary reports that part of the stampede began because somebody yelled shots fired and gun, and so that led people to start running. And as you said, early pictures coming out that I'm seeing on Twitter, there chaos. There's, like you said, shoes, purse, everything is just scattered all over the ground. I came in just as the fireworks were letting out, and the amount of people pouring out of that area was tremendous. So I can't imagine being actually on the pier and being that crammed in, and then something like that happening. It had to be terrifying for the people who were in the middle of it.
Yeah, and you know, even upon exiting about an hour after this, even at that point, there's still police response coming in. There's still EMTs coming to the area. There's still a lot of sirens and chaos, and you know, a lot of people seem to be looking for people they had gotten separated from their party. So you know, a lot of that. So the Sun Times initially reported that there were 4 stabs. So at this point, they've said there's 3 stabbed. There was a police presser a bit ago saying 3 stabbed, and the person who had either was initially reported as the 4th stabbing victim or someone who was potentially shot, there has not been, the police have said there was not a shooting, but there was somebody who said there was a gun. But yeah, as you said, they've since said this was someone who was punctured on an overturned table on the way out in that chaos.
And they're also saying that the people who were stabbed are not, at this point, not cooperating with police, so... Initial reports were that it was because of a fight, so who knows what's going on there, and if the victims are not going to cooperate, it might take a while to get to the bottom of this.
Yeah, that detail emerged pretty quickly at the presser given by police, as well as the CPD chief communication officer on Twitter has been saying the same, that the 3 are not cooperative with police at this point, which is I feel like that's an interesting detail to be pointing out so repeatedly. They've also said initially there was 16 hospitalized from injuries in the stampede, and now that number has been 14. So at least we know at least a dozen, but possibly a few more than that injured as a result of that stampede, which is absolutely not surprising after seeing what was left behind. There were chairs damaged and flipped over, and you know, you could tell that there was a great deal of chaos on that exit as people were leaving the pier so quickly.
Well, yeah, if people think they're in danger, they're not thinking about, let's leave it in orderly fashion. It's, let's get the hell out of here as fast as we can and grab the people we love and try to get them out. And I'm not surprised, you mentioned you were surprised by the police giving that detail repeatedly that the victims are not being cooperative. In my opinion, that's just the police saying, listen, we're doing our best, so if it takes us a while to figure it out, it's not on us. It's the fact that, you know, the victims are not helping us out. So I can see why they would keep pointing that out.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, I think it was interesting that, you know, Lightfoot came out and said, hey, there's going to be 1,500 additional police on the streets today, and we're the new sheriff in town. We're going out this a different way. And that was certainly clear from the beginning. You know, the police also pointed out that this happened just outside that security perimeter, and we're, you know, kept reminding people, hey, you know, we did our job.
Right.
The security screening worked. This was outside of that.
And that seems to be the case. Whenever there's violence after, whether it's after Lollapalooza or Taste of Chicago or the fireworks, it's always just outside. So, as you said, then they can say, well, listen, we kept it out of the venue. The event was safe. What happens outside, sometimes we can't control.
Right. And where, from the looks of the damage in the area of overturned chairs and things left behind, this started pretty far back in the pier, about halfway at that point. So, you know, the boat that I exited was further down, and immediately, you know, we were seeing a lot of debris, a lot of stuff left behind, a lot of personal items left behind. And then the closer you got to the exit, that's where you started seeing damaged chairs and tables and half-eaten meals and things like that that had been quickly abandoned in all that chaos.
Well, I'm glad you're okay, Amy, and thank you for staying up and giving us the details and what you saw. It's you know, an unfortunate end to what looked like a wonderful display.
That's right. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, well, glad to help.
Enjoy the rest of your night. Get some sleep, and I'm sure you're in here tomorrow. You're always in here sometime.
I'm always there.
All right. Well, we'll be listening for you. Thanks, Amy.
Thanks, Brian.
Take care. That's Amy Guth. You can hear her on Crane's Business, the Daily Gist, and you can hear her here on WGN. Yeah, Amy's always around. She's always somewhere. Tom used to work with Amy all the time. Tom, so, you know, we love Amy here, don't we?
She is one of the greats.
One of the greats.
One of the greats.
One of the greats.
Taught me everything I know.
Wow.
Tommy Howe.
So, all right, I'll send her the notes then instead of instead of the bosses. All right, let's take a quick break. Are we? I'm going to listen. I hate to do this, but I'm a little gun shy after last night. Do I promo the guest? Are we good? We good with the guest? No, we don't promo the guest yet. All right. Listen, we might have a guest. We might be talking about a book. If we're not talking to the author of the book, we're going to talk about the subject matter of the book because it's fascinating. So either way, we're going to talk about lost restaurants of Chicago. We're going to do it, Tom. Don't worry. Let's do this first, and then we'll just roll with it. This is becoming our MO. We like to book it big and then have nobody show up.
It's my kind of town, Chicago is my kind of town Chicago is.
Hi, Brian Noonan in for Nick D. Yes, this is, you know what, this is a great bump to come into our next guest, an author of a wonderful book called Lost Restaurants of Chicago. That author is Greg Borzo. Greg, welcome. Yeah, Greg's not here. I don't know what it is. We are 0-2 on big guests. We had Gallagher supposedly booked last night. Here's a Gallagher update. I get a call this morning from the guy who I went through or who contacted me. This guy contacted me to book Gallagher. So I was doing him a favor, you know, because Gallagher, quite frankly, he's played a pizza joint this weekend. So Gallagher needed some help. So I said, yeah. Well, you know, I'd love to talk to Gallagher. He's a comedy legend. That would be terrific. So Gallagher, if you were listening last night, you know Gallagher, or this yesterday morning, Gallagher didn't show. He was supposed to call. We had his backup number to call him. You can't leave a message on his phone. You have to text him. So Tom was frantically texting him. We were trying to get a hold of him. Gallagher didn't show up. I get a call this morning from that guy apologizing up and down. And he said, I just had my last conversation with Gallagher ever. He's a rude, sick SOB. And I'm never doing business with him, and I apologize up and down. Brian, I'm so sorry. You were doing me a favor. Now I owe you, and blah, blah, blah. So Gallagher didn't come. Now, I was really looking forward to this interview. Mm-hmm. I was really, this book, Lost Restaurants of Chicago, is fascinating because it goes all the way back to like when Chicago was first a city. And it talks about all these wonderful restaurants and all these types of restaurants that have come and gone. So we'll talk about that a little bit because there were a couple in here that I was like, oh, I didn't even realize that's gone. So 312-981-7200, if you want to jump in with your favorite restaurants in the city or the surrounding suburbs that are gone. For example, as I'm flipping through this book, and now full disclosure because I always like to be honest with you. Tom tells me, listen, don't go off on this guy just because he blew us off, which is not a nice move to just blow us off. Tom said, don't go off on him because we might want to talk to him again down the road, which is fine. I know Nick will treat him with the utmost respect, as you will, because he'll probably show up. I know it's a holiday, and that's always hard. But, you know, a commitment's a commitment. Guy must not want to sell books. Right? That's all. Just doesn't want to sell books. Nice Chicago guy, too. He's done all kinds of things. He's very much in love with this city. Anyway, so I'll tell you, we'll still give a few hints from the book. So the most unusual, because he talks about in the introduction, why some restaurants close, you know? He said some restaurants, they're open for over a century. Others faltered within a few months. I'll read from the book. Prohibition did some in. Others were closed by the health department. Still others simply ran their course or fell behind changing tastes. Some quit at the top of their game. Some hung around too long. One of the most unusual closings was Monastero's Restaurant and Banquets, which was at 3935 West Devon. It opened in 1967 and was very successful until 2017 when an offer for its property came out of the blue. Monastero sold its property to Elam Romanian Pentecostal Church so the church could build a new church and community center. And you may say, why that spot? Church leaders wanted the property because a study had concluded that Monastero's was at the geographic center of their congregation. So this restaurant went out on top. I didn't realize Have you been to, do you go to Chinatown, Tom? You ever been to Chinatown?
Yeah, I love Chinatown.
Love it. Chinatown is wonderful.
It's awesome.
Wan Khao. Did you ever eat at Wan Khao?
I did not.
Wan Khao, I didn't realize, closed just last year. And it was the longest running, longest continuously operating Chinese restaurant in the city. Wan Khao, I forget, when did it open? I'm looking. I had it. But these are all, he highlighted restaurants that closed early, or closed within, while the book was being done. They opened in 1928, Wan Khao. You had to go up it was kind of like something out of a movie. You had to walk up a real narrow staircase to get up. The restaurant was up on the second floor, and it was crazy to get up there. And it was one of those Chinese restaurant menus that were about 87 pages, and they had everything under the sun. And it was old school Chinese, not Asian fusion with a little lemongrass and this. No, it was chop suey, which I don't even know. That's how I know a place is good and old school.
If they have chop suey.
If it says chop suey in neon in the window. That's how I know. That's the place I'm going.
I like any restaurant that puts neon in the window. Big fan of neon.
I am too, and to me it's a throwback to like, hey, this is classic. We used to go to this Chinese restaurant in near our old house. And it was called Wing Wah. And in the window, it had a crooked neon sign. So whoever hung the neon didn't figure out that it wasn't straight. But they said chop suey. And this place, oh man, it was unbelievable. It was in Riverside on Harlem. It was great. And then we would order there probably sometimes every week, once a week, sometimes every other week. And then one day we called and there was no answer. And I was coming home from here, and we were going to order Chinese food. So my wife called, she goes, there's no answer at Wing Wah. And I said, well, I'll just drive by and pick it up. Because it always, 15 minutes. Every Chinese restaurant, doesn't matter how much you order, how little you order, 15 minutes. Really? They used to say, when do you want it? Yesterday. 15 minutes. It didn't matter. I could tell them anything. Yeah. When do you want it? Thursday. It'll be ready in 15 minutes. Okay. So I knew the most I was going to stay, I'd be sitting in Wing Wah's little, and it was just a walk up. You walked into this little shop and a white wall with a window. And there was like a bench to sit on. The menu was up on the wall. And it was this woman and her husband. And they had to be 107 years old. These people were old. But they made some fine Chinese food.
And they did it fast.
They did it 15 minutes. So I drive up and it's dark and I'm like, I wonder if they're on vacation, because sometimes around the holidays, they would take a month off, and they'd travel back to home or wherever. And then, because of social media, there's all these neighborhood groups. Do you belong? You got a new place. Do you belong to the neighborhood group on Facebook?
No, I've had to deal with a horrendous app called Nextdoor.
Oh, I've heard of Nextdoor.
Oh, my God. It is, if you think Facebook conversation is bad, Nextdoor conversation is even worse.
So this is just people who are, you have to get a code to join it,
yes,
right?
And
so,
it's limited to a specific neighborhood. Right. I think mine might even, I live in Uptown, which is comprised really of several slightly smaller neighborhoods,
yeah,
if you want to call it, or like just areas. You know, in Uptown, you've got like Sheridan Park is okay. Technically a subset of Uptown, or Little Vietnam is its own subset of Uptown.
Because I can't go there.
You don't like Little Vietnam?
No, I have flashbacks.
So anyway, it's usually people just incredulously typing things in all caps.
Oh, they're yes.
Just
they're
like gunshots?
What?
And huh? It's just like, well, I mean, you know, maybe if you've heard gunshots, the first thing you should do is call the police.
Nope, I got to get on Nextdoor.
I got to tell everybody within Sheridan Park or Clarendon Park or any other subset of Uptown, your little subset, gunshots? I don't know.
Yeah, those things. We were in one for Berwyn, and man, oh man, people are insane. There was a guy on there whose sole purpose was to make sure the dogs didn't walk around. And if they do walk around, they never walked on his grass. Not poop on his grass, which I understand. You don't want dogs pooping on your lawn.
Sure.
I get it. But he went so far as to say no dog should even walk on his lawn. That we should, you know, you should put your dog on the street. Because, and this every day, this guy, I don't know if he had a job. I don't know if he, what his deal is, other than just watching his lawn to make sure that, God forbid, no canine footprint got on his grass. But anyway, that's how we found out that the Wing Wah people retired. You didn't think I was coming back to tie that story up, but I did. Tied it all up. 312-981-7200. If you want to talk about some of your favorite restaurants that are no longer here, we can do that. We've got a lot of other things to talk about as well, so we will do that after we do the news, which we'll do after this. Wow. All right. I feel the same way, Tom. Thank you for sending me that oral love letter from The Cure.
Who doesn't love The Cure? Come on.
I don't know.
Yeah. Wait, you're not a Cure person?
No, I could take or leave The Cure. I mean, I don't have anima. I'm not you and Brett with Brad Paisley. I'm not. I was thinking of you today because they. I thought of you today on two different occasions. One, because our new neighbors were having a cookout today. Plus, I was able to sleep through most of it. Because,
good job.
Yeah. Well.
Well, you nailed your.
Oh man, I nailed up the two blankets per window, so the room was very dark this morning. But then I don't know how you do it. My body still was like, dude, it's time to be up. You're supposed to be awake. So I was up. I went to bed. You know. I tried to stay awake a little when I got home. So I got home. I don't know what was happening last night. I leave here, and you know, I pay to park in the building with Spot Hero. So they got a pretty good rate. I'm very excited. Mm-hmm. And but you use the QRL codes to get in and out, which I don't trust all this technology. I need a guy in a booth down there because that's gonna be what happens. All right. So I go to leave and my QR code is beeping in the machine and it's saying, not transmitting. Try again or call for assistance. And I'm like, now, you know, it's 5:30. I want to go home. Just like anybody else, when you're off work, when your time is up, you want to go home. You want to just leave. I don't want to be held prisoner in the bowels of this building because, quite frankly, there's not much down there. Well, because it's the bowels of the building. And what's down there needs to get out. Me included. So I try it a few more times because I've got to think, well, it's scanned to get me in. It's got to let me out. So I scan it. Deep. Not reading. Call for assistance. Dink. Not reading. Call for assistance. So I press the assistance button and it rings and rings and rings. Now, it may have only been 30, 45 seconds, but it seemed like an hour and a half. And finally, a woman comes on. Can I help you? I said, yes, I'm trying to leave, and this is the message I'm getting. Mm-hmm, how did you pay? Spot Hero, what's your number? I give her the number. Well, did it scan you to get in? Yes. And now I'm trying to stay calm, because me losing my temper is not going to get me out of this garage any faster. And I actually, this is how fatigued and loony I was. I looked at the little bar across, and I thought, if that was balsa wood, I could probably take it out with my car. But it looks like there's a big metal attachment. So it would probably do a lot of damage. Plus then there's a door, like a garage door. So then I would, if I broke through the gate, I can't break through the garage door. I'm not Smokey and the Bandit. This isn't the Fast and the Furious. I got to get out of here. I don't know. So I'm trying to maintain my calm. And once I told her that it had scanned me in, then she let me out. So I leave, and I'm like, oh, this is great. All right, so I'm gonna go down Lower Wacker. It's going to shoot me right on to Ida B. Wells. Bang, I'm on the Eisenhower, and I'm home. Perfect. For some reason, Lower Wacker Drive, I should have called in and talked to Schwanee. Lower Wacker Drive was closed down, police presence, right at Lower Michigan and Lower Lakeshore Drive.
Oh, man.
Yep, Lower Wacker and Lower Michigan. So I don't know what was going on there. It was very... So then I get on the side streets and it's all... Anyway, I get home and I try... Because I had asked you, what do? You stay up a little bit before you go to bed.
Yes.
And then try to get... And I remember Dan saying that too, and other people who've worked third shift, they go, you stay up a little bit and then you try to get your whole sleep in. You know, your whole chunk of sleep. So I think to myself, well, I'm a little hungry. I'll have a little something for breakfast, and I'll sit and I'll watch Jessica Jones on Netflix, and then I'll go to bed in about an hour. I was asleep in about 10 minutes because the whole episode of Jessica Jones ran, and I woke up when the theme music for the next episode started. I was like, ah, what happened? So I go up to my bear cave, and it's dark, and I fall asleep, and it's great, but my body kept wanting to wake up because it should be up. So that was, anyway, that was that. But, so my neighbor is having the barbecue. You didn't think I'd get back. I love watching you going, he's never getting back to where he started. This is,
I have to stop doubting you. Yeah, well, because it always happens.
I'll always come back. I'll always come back some way. So my new neighbors are having a barbecue. And, you know what their soundtrack was? It was all fly jams. It was old R&B and 60s soul. And I was like, oh, this is great. So I took the garbage out, and I see one of the guys. He's like, oh, our music isn't too loud, is it? I go, no, man. This way I don't have to turn my own on. This is great. So I said, instead of staying in and doing some stuff, I sat on the patio and smoked a cigar and listened to their soundtrack.
See, and I got shout out to your neighbor for the first thing him saying, oh, I'm sorry, is that too loud?
Yeah.
And like, I think that's, I appreciate that.
That was really cool.
That's really cool of him.
I think the guy who asked me may have been a guest. I don't think he was, because I met the dad later in the day. I met him. My wife had already, and he was very nice. And some people, when I went out to do our bratwurst on the grill, some people were like, oh, hey, how's it going? And so everybody was very friendly. But yes, it was really courteous of him to ask. And it was, I mean, you know how close lots are in the city, so music doesn't have to be loud for your neighbor to hear it, but it was not, it wasn't like, oh my God, it wasn't permeating the house. It was just, if I'm sitting on the deck and he's sitting 15 feet away,
yeah, you're gonna
hear his music. And it was good music, so I enjoyed that. So that was the first time I thought of you today. Then, after we eat dinner, I turned on TV and the Macy's was doing the big fireworks celebration. But they kept cutting out to Phoenix, where country bromance Luke Bryan was out there. And he was doing a lot of country songs about getting in trucks. And his big summer hit, Knockin' Boots. He was doing the sing-along for Knockin' Boots. And I had never heard that song before. And now that I've heard it, I never need to hear it again. But I was like, oh, Tom would hate this. The only thing that would have made it worse is if Brad Paisley had come out and accompanied him on guitar.
Oh, boy.
For you. Now, I will say Luke Bryan does not wear a cowboy hat, which seemed to be one of your big stumbling blocks with Brad Paisley.
I'll take the cowboy hat. The cowboy hat's fine. Plenty of country artists that I very much enjoy.
Traditional country guys wear hats.
Wear a hat. That's fine. It's just, it's the subject matter. So if Brad Paisley, you know, we had a request yesterday.
Yes, we did.
The one about the Whiskey Lullaby. I think that was the name of it.
Whiskey Lullaby.
I was like, no, I enjoy this.
It was a really good song.
I enjoyed that. It's when we get into the stuff where it's like, you know, I got my girl in my jeans and we're going to the party. And my dog's in the back of my pickup.
Pull up Knockin' Boots. It's a whole litany of things.
I'm not doing that.
Yeah, you got to. It's a whole litany of things. Pull it up and get to the chorus, because fishing in the dark needs nitty gritty, like the nitty gritty dirt bed. There's a whole litany of things that go together, and then these boots need knocking, and everybody yells out Knockin' Boots, and it's all these, you know. They keep cutting to the crowd, and it's all women in sundresses and cowboy boots, which is a great look, and they're all screaming about Knockin' Boots. And I'm like, this is not woke. This bro country doesn't seem woke at all to me. And I, as I mentioned last night, I am a big country fan. I love country music. But this was it. So when you get that, I want to see your face when you sample this for the first time. Because this is the exact type of song you were talking about that you would hate.
Where they're just listing. Here, let's. I think this is the chorus right here. I'm not entirely sure.
Sing-alongs need to be sung. Tip bells need to be rung.
It changes throughout the whole song.
Last calls need to call that cabin. Back seats need, I want you so bad. Yeah, birds need bees and ice needs whiskey.
Hang on.
Boys like me need girls like you to kiss.
Boys like me need girls like you to kiss me. Nitty gritty.
Under that pale moon.
And everybody's pointing to the sky.
City needs that sugar stirring. Small town nuts need both things burning.
Now he's wearing a backwards baseball cap at this point.
Hearts need falling. Boots need knocking. Knocking boots.
There you go. I thought, man, I wish Tom was here now.
He'd be having a coronary.
I thought you'd be line dancing, perhaps boot scooting. perhaps you'd be doing the achy breaky dance with Billy Ray Cyrus.
Now, I don't mind, you know, I don't mind a little achy breaky heart. All I'm going to say is something that I noticed about a lot of these songs, and this is a little bit inside baseball or inside music theory, that's the exact same chord progression as Let It Be. By the Beatles.
Right.
The
exact same chord. Wait. Did you say achy breaky is the same?
No, this knockin' boots. Oh, this knockin' boots. It's the exact same chord set.
There's only three chords, Tom. All music is just three chords.
You know,
I don't believe that.
Let me put on some Rush, and then we'll find out.
No, I don't believe you. I don't believe that.
No, but country. It's clearly popular stuff. It's people want it. It draws huge crowds. Did you see that Lake Shake Festival?
Yes, it's enormous. And this type of country, because it's deemed more accessible. It's that, and they keep using the term, and I keep using it too, bro country. It's the same kind of thing. And it started when Kenny Chesney decided he needed to co-opt Jimmy Buffett's vibe and make everything island. So now, what used to be music really of about working men and women and
prison value and, like,
and it was a traditional kind of thing, now has become this fake beach, always summer. All the girls are always wearing short shorts. They're always tan. They always want to hop up in the back of your truck. And it's all that or something really, really tragic. And that's not and really not that many of them. You need a couple slow songs so you can, you know, slow dance with your lady.
Sure.
You can't always be line dancing to Knockin' Boots. Sometimes you got to be, you know, rubbing pelvi, and that's a whole different song of Luke Bryan's, rubbing pelvi.
Well, I think it's interesting what you're bringing up, because country did used to be about the everyday heartache.
Yes.
Like, I mean, most country songs are kind of depressing. It's just like, I lost my house, my woman, lost my dog. It's all about the things you didn't have.
Right.
And then you're in prison as well, on top of that.
Of course.
So I like that. I like a lot of classic country, and I guess that makes me sound like, you know, this newfangled music. There's modern country I do like that does do that. You ever heard of Sturgill Simpson?
No.
He's great. Vic loves him. He's an amazing country.
Is he on Outlaw Country?
Yeah, he's a little bit more in that tradition.
I probably heard him, because I listen to Outlaw Country a lot.
Yeah, he's more in that tradition, but he brings a modern twist to it.
That's what we need, modern twist.
Yeah, so he's really great. And he doesn't get invited to the big country things. Like, he famously, there was one, either the Country Music Award or whatever awards. He wasn't even invited. He wasn't nominated. He wasn't even invited. And really, he put out one of the best country albums of the year.
Well, that's
so he went and he just literally played a free show for everybody outside of the gates.
Nice.
He's like, I'm Sturgill Simpson. I deserve to be here because I'm doing country too, but it's not a very commercial type of country.
Well, that's why it was such a coup a couple years ago when Chris Stapleton came on the scene, and he'd been around for a long time, but Chris Stapleton is a much more traditional throwback country artist.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Why isn't US 99 calling us right now to do a show? Because we are, man, we are all over the country lifestyle.
Man, I'm so country.
I was country when country wasn't cool. Me, Barbara Mandrell, putting peanuts in our Coke. There's a throwback traditional country. There's an old school country reference for you.
About peanuts in our Coke?
That's I was country when wasn't cool. If you pull up that song, you'll get, there's that reference.
Can't wait for it.
Yeah. that's old. I mean, that's old Barbara Mandrell. Back, it's got to be mid-80s. Early 80s, mid 80s.
Yeah, because there was a while where country was not as cool.
Right.
Not even close to cool.
Right, and then all of a sudden, I mentioned this yesterday, then it was Garth Brooks. Garth Brooks made country really cool and accessible to a giant audience. Garth Brooks, when that first album came out, he exploded. And all of a sudden, everybody was listening to, you know, Friends in Low Places and all of the, Thank God for Unanswered Prayers, that song. Those things hit huge. And then his shows became not just a guy in a hat standing in the middle of the stage like George Strait, who is unbelievable, but George Strait stands at a microphone and sings. Randy Travis stood at a microphone and sang. All the old guys, there wasn't a big rock and roll show. Garth Brooks took that rock and roll sensibility, because he grew up listening to Kiss and Zeppelin and all these things, and he made country shows, big rock and roll shows. And that changed the whole perception and the whole trajectory of country music. And that's me.
There's your country history 101.
There's your country history 101. I'll be on Big 95.5 doing mornings in a month and a half.
I used to work there.
Did you really?
Well, I worked for iHeartMedia.
Okay.
So I was their promotion. I was their promotions guy. Like I would help. I would be an assistant. So I would help out all the promotion stuff. And I used to get to drive the Big 95.5 truck.
Oh, of course it was a truck.
Oh, my God.
Was it a monster truck? Now, were you there when South Dakota, Birmingham, Alabama, and Jonesboro, Arkansas were the morning team?
No. I had Mason, Remy, and Alabama.
Yes, that's who I was.
Oh, is that who they are?
No, I don't know.
I don't know. I was just
making fun of the, you know, there was Mason and Alabama.
Yeah, Mason, Remy, and Alabama were the morning show hosts at that time. And I did a lot of big events because the country events are usually the biggest.
Oh, huge.
I went out to like, what's that? There's like a Speedway in Skokie or something. Or maybe it's not.
There's one in Joliet.
That's the one I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
It's Joliet Speedway.
Yeah.
I was out there mingling with fine Americans. Trying to play bags for t-shirts, which is really cool. What else?
Did you have koozies?
We didn't have koozies.
What?
Which was
How
a total,
do you go to a country show without
know.
Koozies?
I really don't know.
It's like going to a metal show without a black t-shirt. It just,
yeah, man,
you can't,
it's just wrong. It
you
doesn't
just
make
can't
any sense.
Do it.
But I think
we don't want to promote drinking for our station.
Really? 98% of your songs talk about bourbon and beer.
I think we had them, but we had given them all out.
Oh.
They like when I arrived
well, sure,
for my
big.
Shift, they were gone.
So
they
now,
were.
When you press the horn, did it play? I wish I was in the land of cotton. What did the horn?
No, it was just a regular old horn.
Oh, that's
it was
sad.
A Ford F-150.
Well, that's a good truck.
Yeah,
the horn is disappointing.
It's a tough truck to get out of Lower Wacker, though.
Yeah,
because they're not far from us. They're literally a hop, skip, and a jump. Their offices.
Really?
So I would used to, yeah, literally the Lower Wacker right here. Right.
Think we could hotwire it and take it for a ride?
Do you still have the keys? No.
Let's take the big 95.5 truck for a roll. We'll take it out. We'll put our flatbed down. Get some girls up in the back. And then knock boots.
Oh, goodness.
Knocking boots. All right. On that note, we have big hot dog news, too. Hot dog news after this, WGN. I hope it is not the last day of summer. What's July 5th? Is that where we're at? Yeah, yesterday was
Real quick one. About 2 weeks.
two weeks of summer. That's it. That's all we got. It's 4th of July. We mentioned yesterday that there was going to be the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Championship. And once again, Joey Jaws Chestnut is the big winner. He ate 71 hot dogs to secure his 12th title at Nathan's famous annual July 4th Hot Dog Eating Contest. I think it's time I'm calling for Joey Chestnut to retire. We need new blood in the competitive hot dog eating world. Kobayashi took him out once. Mm-hmm. Then Joey Chestnut has regained his dominance. Joey Chestnut, not good on The Amazing Race. He was on last season with another competitive eater. They did not do very well. But Joey did not. Last year he ate 74. So he's slipping. He still won. He outdistanced his opponents by a long shot. And yet, This could be the window of championships could be closing for Joey Chestnut. I say retire on top. You've won 12 times. It's an even dozen. You walk away now. That's what you got to do.
How many young people are coming up to replace him, though?
I don't know if anybody's chomping at his heels. Listen, we're going to have worst joke of the night voting at the end of the show.
We
and that's going to be number one with a bullet. I put a lot of relish on that one. Oh boy.
There it is.
I told you, if I came in a little goofy tonight and looked tired, that's why. Anyway, so he ate, I don't know if anybody, is that something you aspire to? I don't even know how one becomes a competitive eater. I don't know how that comes into your mind, saying, you know what I want to do? I want to eat a huge, gluttonous amount of food and try to win prizes and cash. He won $10,000 for eating 71 hot dogs.
I don't think that's nearly enough.
No, I don't either.
I feel like a $10,000 seems kind of low.
I think it's too much. I think if the prize money was lower, we wouldn't have to sit through this every year. Now, you may be saying, Brian, you're very sexist. Why did you not bring up the female winner? All right, relax. I'll tell you. Mickey Sudo, she had won the women's competition. She downed 31 hot dogs.
That's a great name.
Nicky Sudo? Mickey Sudo. Yeah, M-I-K-I.
Sounds Mickey like someone Sudo. Who might work for the family, you know. Oh, sure. Look out. That's Mickey Sudo over
right.
there.
She may have only eaten 16 hot dogs. They gave her 31, just in case, you know. My father said I ate 31 hot dogs. Okay, Mickey, you ate 31 hot dogs. Sure, that's fantastic. Yeah, well, however many hot dogs you need. Now, she fell short, too. Last year, she ate 37. But this year, she was down to 31. But Sonia the Black Widow Thomas holds the all-time women's record with 45 hot dogs in 10 minutes.
Imagine getting a nickname like the Black Widow for eating a ton of hot dogs really quickly.
Yeah, that's...
That sounds like, oh, what's her deal? Did a lot of her husbands die or something like that? No, she just can eat a lot of hot dogs real quick.
Yeah, she's a gamer. She can put them down. She can put them down faster than any other lady.
My God.
Good for you, Black Widow. So they each get $10,000. Spectators were there. It started in 1972, this whole debauchery. And, you know, the company has long promoted the event with a theatrical backstory that places its start date in 1916. Chestnut has only lost once in 2007.
And but that was to Kobayashi?
Yes, I was to Kobayashi. There is an ESPN documentary which was released Tuesday. I have to watch this now.
It's really cool.
Did you see it already?
I watched most of it, but then I had to go to bed.
Then you had to go have lunch. Then I got really hungry.
All of a sudden I had this hankering for hot dogs.
Oh, how do you not?
No, it was a really fascinating thing because it's a weird piece of Americana.
That is the ultimate niche market. Competitive eaters. I interviewed a local competitive eater years ago. I don't even know if he still competes. Patrick Bertoletti. He used to, Deep Dish was his name at first. Then he opened a restaurant. He opened like Taco in a Bag, I think is his restaurant. I believe that's true. It's up near the Old Town School of Folk.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's not a plug. It's just I talked to him about it and I forget how he said he started competitive eating. But it's like one day, because we've all eaten, at some point in your life, you've overeaten something. You know, maybe it's one night after you had a couple of cocktails, you went to White Castle and you had a dozen.
That has happened to me far too many times.
Yeah. Trust me. I put a hurting on those sliders.
And you're just like, why? Why would I? The next day, you're just like, why would I do this to myself?
I think the most I ever could get down was 8.
I've gotten the dirty dozen before.
Have you really?
Yeah. Oh. Well, you know, we have to take into account. I'm a slightly younger man than you.
Sure.
Just ever so slightly.
Well, I was young once too, Tom. I didn't come out like this. It's taken decades to hammer me into the psychotic mess you see in front of you.
You couldn't do the dozen?
I don't know. Maybe I just... I don't know. I don't know if I ever tried. I think I just...
No, that's good. No, it's good. It's terrible. It's probably the worst thing you can do to your body.
Let's get a couple Crave cases in here. Go for it.
What's a Crave case? 30?
It's 24 or 36.
Okay. That used to be a competition in my hometown.
Not a Crave case?
Yeah.
Not anything official.
Not anything official. It was very informal.
Bunch of guys at the park on a Saturday.
No, really. We would every year. It was a competition. I want to say it was mainly among guys that went to Prairie Ridge High School. But people would compete. They would go and you'd get a Crave case and you had to try and eat the whole thing.
Was there a time limit?
There was no time limit.
Oh, see, you got to time those things.
Because most of the time you would throw up or you'd tap out. If you tapped out, and if you threw up, you were done. I don't think I ever saw more people puking in a single White Castle location.
Really?
Yeah, it was horrible. People would just run the bathroom.
Now, wait. So they would allow you to do this at the actual White Castle?
Well, they stopped after. They were like, okay, we've had enough. Please stop puking in our bathroom.
Come back here. You can't come back here with your crazy contest.
You can come back and buy the burgers.
Sure, buy them.
But, like, take it elsewhere. Take it elsewhere.
Take your vomitory competition somewhere else.
But that's just the sort of thing that, you know, 15, 16-year-old guys do because there's, you know, nothing else better to do. I mean, you could be talking to girls, having a social life, you know, doing something, becoming an Eagle Scout.
Nah.
We're going to eat 30 hamburgers.
I got to be a competitive eater. That's exactly what I'm going to do, and that's what we're going to do. After the, oh, man, wait, I know we got to go to the news, but we have to set this up because the Overnight Arcade is back. The Overnight Arcade is coming up on the other side of the news. So, Tom, we need to decide on what number callers you would like to have for the Overnight Arcade.
Now, what do you feel is a good
I want to make it easy for you. So we need two contestants for the first round. Then we'll take two contestants for the second round. We probably should have thought all this out before the show, but we were busy doing other things like
Crave cases.
Talking about Crave cases. So how about caller 4 and caller 7?
Sounds good.
So caller 4 and caller 7 at 312-981-7200. You will play the Overnight Arcade. Now, we're doing American history trivia. It is, I'm going to be honest with you, it's pretty easy. If you don't know these trivia questions, and a lot of them are multiple choice, then maybe you should get on a boat and get out of here. 312-981-7200, caller 4 and caller 7. When you hear David start the news, you can play on the Overnight Arcade, and we have valuable prizes.
Shall we play a game?
It's a new game, only this time the game is real. Can you handle it?
Everybody play the game. Time to play the game.
Oh my goodness, it has been way too long since we have heard the theme song to America's favorite overnight radio quiz show. Yes, it is the Overnight Arcade on WGN. I am your quizmaster, Brian Noonan. With me tonight, Tom Hush. You will be keeping score and answering the phone and doing all the hard jobs while I just get to pretend that I am a quizmaster. If you did not get through to play along with us on the air, then wake up your kids, go next door, get someone out of bed, because during the Overnight Arcade, at-home wagering not only encouraged, but expected. Let's meet our players, shall we? First, we say hello to Marilyn in Geneva. Hello, Marilyn. Welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning. What do you do, Marilyn?
I am retired.
What did you used to do?
I worked in accounts payable.
Accounts payable. Very good. Are you a history buff?
Not so much.
All right, well, then you should do very well on this game, Marilyn. It's all about American history. You're going to do great. Let's meet your challenger, and that is Jason. Hi, Jason.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing well. What do you do, Jason?
I'm a IT professional.
An IT professional. You had to hesitate there, Jason. Are you? Do you work for the government?
It's a little late, actually, so... Wow. Trying to get my brain in order here.
All right. It is very early. Now, Jason, I asked Marilyn this. Are you a history buff?
I'm in the same boat with her. I'm not really.
All right. Well, this is going to be fantastic, Tom. We're playing American History Trivia on the Overnight Arcade. But I'll be honest with you, Jason and Marilyn. These questions are not very difficult. A lot of them are multiple choice, so I think you'll do just fine. Here's the rules of the game. I'll ask you a question. If you get it right, hey, you get a point. If not, your opponent gets a chance to steal. First 1 to 5 correct answers, or whoever is leading when time runs out, will be our winner. Do you understand the rules, Jason and Marilyn? Are you ready to play the game?
I'm ready.
All right, here we go. This is very exciting. Let me flip the coin, see who goes first. And the first question goes to Marilyn. Marilyn, here we go. What was the name of the group that left England and sailed to America seeking freedom of religion?
Is this multiple choice?
No, this one is not multiple choice. We're starting out with just a straight-up answer. Who sailed over from England and landed?
I don't know. The Pilgrims.
The Pilgrims. Yes, the Pilgrims. Uh-oh, what happened? The CD isn't working. Very sad. It was working before. Yes, that is a correct answer. Very good. Marilyn, you're on the board with one. We checked this before the show, Tom. We actually checked this, and it was supposed to be working. But it's not. What are you going to do? All right, maybe we can find Ernie. All right, that's all right. Let's go to Jason. Jason, your question.
Yeah.
The tax imposed on the colonists by Britain that taxed almost everything made of paper was called what? Was it the paper tax, the pulp tax, the Stamp Act, or stupid?
I'll call it the Stamp Act.
The Stamp Act. Ding, 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 ding. Yes, you are correct. That is a tie now, Tom. We've finished round one. Where are we at?
We're at 1-1.
1-1. That's right. That's how we do it. 1-1. We're all tied up with 1-1. All right. We go back to Marilyn. Marilyn, here we go. Oh, Marilyn, for some reason you're getting questions that are not multiple choice, but that's okay. That's all right.
Okay.
Don't panic. In 1849, gold was found in what state starting the gold rush?
California.
California. Ding, ding, ding. Yes, very good. You're back on the board. That's another correct answer. Good for you, Marilyn. See, these questions are easy, Tom. I like to make them easy. You know why? Because then people, it's the middle of the night. Nobody wants to feel like they should have spent more time in school. These questions are made for people who, you know, maybe like me. They didn't pay too much attention. All right, Jason.
And it was a long time ago.
It was a long time ago. Well, it's history, too, which makes it even a longer time ago. All right, here we go, Jason. Your chance to tie it up with Marilyn. Name the system of roads, swamps, and houses that slaves could use while escaping to the north.
This is not multiple choice, I assume.
No, if it was multiple choice, I would have given you multiple choices.
I'll say the Underground Railroad.
You'll say the Underground Railroad, and I'll say, yes, that's exactly right, the Underground Railroad. Very good. Tom, we've ended another round.
Well, surprising no one. It's a dead heat.
Dead heat.
2-2.
2-2. Wow, this game is going to come down to the wire. It's going to be somebody's going to have to make a mistake. Do me a favor, Tom. See if you can find Ernie and ask him why our sound effects aren't working all of a sudden. I feel like the game is not the same when all our sound effects are not there. But that's not your problem, Marilyn or Jason. Your problem is to win the game. Marilyn, here we go. A multiple choice question for you, Marilyn. During World War I, the United States was part of which group? Was it the Central Powers, the Allied Powers, the Alliance for Defeat of Germany, or Wilson's Warriors?
Allied Powers?
The Allied Powers is absolutely right, putting you on the board again. Very good. Jason, you're giggling. You knew that one, didn't you, Jason?
Yeah. You know? Okay.
Oh, you didn't know that one. Okay.
No. Okay, I'm ready.
All right, here you go. Wake up, Jason. It's time to go. In 1846, Sam Bowie, Davy Crockett, and a small group of Americans fought against the Mexican army in what Texas fort? 1846, Sam Bowie, Davy Crockett, and a small group of Americans fought against the Mexican army in what Texas fort?
Texas fort?
Texas fort. Uh-oh.
I'm just going to pull this out of here. I'm going to say Fort Laramie.
Go! No, that is incorrect. Thank you, Ernie. Ernie coming in, our engineer extraordinaire. That is incorrect. That means, Marilyn, you have a chance to steal. I will repeat the question because I am a benevolent host. In 1846, Sam Bowie, Davy Crockett, and a small group of Americans fought against the Mexican army in what Texas fort?
The Alamo.
The Alamo.
Awesome!
Now we've got the sound effects. Yes. Oh, Tom, now do you know what the score is?
If I'm not mistaken, that makes it 3-2?
No, it's 4-2.
It's 4-2.
Marilyn stole one from Jason.
Ah.
So now we come. This is the most exciting part of the game because we come back to Marilyn, and Marilyn, you have 4. Jason has 2.
Woo-hoo.
Marilyn, if you get this question right, you are the winner. If you get it wrong, Jason gets a chance to steal and close the gap. Marilyn, are you ready?
I am.
All right. During what war was the Star-Spangled Banner written? Was it the Civil War, the Revolutionary War, World War I, or the War of 1812?
1812?
The War of 1812. You say that with a question in your voice. Let's go to the judges. Yes, you are absolutely right. And Marilyn, that means you have won. Tom, make it official.
Marilyn wins?
Yes, that's very good. Thank you, Tom. Tom, very excited about being part of the Overnight Arcade. He's never done it before, and this is big for him. Marilyn, congratulations. Jason, way to play the game. Good job. Let's see what Marilyn has won. Oh, Marilyn, you're going to like this. You have won a pair of lawn tickets to Ravinia on July 21st to see Ghostbusters celebrating its 35th anniversary with the score performed live by the Chicago Symphony Orchestra. And you get to join our very own Dean Richards, who will lead a pre-concert discussion. For those of you who did not win, you get your tickets at Ravinia.org. So congratulations on that, Marilyn. You'll have a great time at Ravinia. And Jason, I hate to send anybody away empty-handed, so I will not send you away empty-handed. I am going to give you a $25 Lumen Malnati's gift certificate. Lou Malnati's is the home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations or order online at loumalnati's.com. So, Jason, you can enjoy some pizza while Marilyn is basking under the stars at Ravinia. Marilyn, congratulations again on the big win. And, Jason,
thank you
for playing our game. You guys were wonderful. Hang on as I put you on hold to make sure that Tom has all your information. And, Tom, I think we're going to play another round because you seem to enjoy that round so much. We're going to do it again. And we always played, I don't know if you ever listened to the Overnight Arcade back in the day. We always do two rounds. So we're going to take some more callers to play the second round. Would you like to pick the numbers or would you like me to do it for you? I will pick the numbers for you. Caller 3 and caller 8. Caller 3 and caller 8 at 312-981-7200. Caller 3 and caller 8. You've heard some of the history questions. You know they are not that difficult. So if you want to play the Overnight Arcade for your chance to win valuable prizes, caller 3 and caller 8, 312-981-7200. Tom will answer the phone. Be nice to him. And then you'll get to play the game. All right? Very good. Let's do this. Then we'll play round 2 of the Overnight Arcade on 720 WGN.
Game on!
Game on!
Time to play the game!
Yes, sirree, you're hearing this right. It is the intro for the Overnight Arcade. Back on WGN, I am your quizmaster, Brian Noonan. Tonight with me, keeping score and just overall enjoying himself immensely, Tom Hush is in the booth. If you were listening in the first round, you know Maryland came away with it. 5-2. We go to the second round, and let's meet our players. First, we say hi to Mark, who is in Joliet. Hi, Mark.
Hello there.
And what do you do for a living, Mark?
I'm actually disabled.
Oh, my goodness. Did you? So, Joliet, did you go to any fireworks today?
I delivered pizzas for 25 years.
Yeah? You delivered pizza for 25 years? What was the most unusual thing you saw when somebody came to the door?
The most unusual, let me think here.
Anybody answer the door naked?
Not naked, just underwear a couple times. A
couple underwears. All right, very nice. Let's see, are you a history buff, Mark?
I'd like to think I am.
All right, well, let's find out, because you are playing against Bob, who is in Orland Park. Hello, Bob.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
I am well. Thank you for asking. And what do you do, Bob?
Well, I haven't learned how to do it yet, so I'm still practicing law.
Practicing law. Yeah, you lawyers always practice. And then one day you retire, and it never seems like you, What kind of law are you practicing?
Family law.
Family law. Does that mean, like, custody kind of things?
Yeah.
What is family law exactly?
Divorces, people who can't get along with each other.
Oh, man, you got to get down here then. We need some family lawyering going on down here because Tom is looking at me like, you've made me answer the phones and do all this stuff. No, I'm kidding. Tom is having fun. I love working with Tom. All right, so, Mark, Bob, you know the rules, right? If you get a question right, you get a point. If you don't get it right, your opponent gets a chance to steal. First 1 to 5 correct answers, or whoever is leading when time runs out, will be the winner. Do you understand the rules, gentlemen? Are you ready, in fact, to play our game?
Ready. Let's do it.
All right, here we go. Do the flip. Let's see. And the first question goes to Bob, our lawyer from Orland Park. All right, Bob, here we go. What European nation originally colonized Florida? Was it England, Spain, France, or Portugal?
Spain.
Spain?
Yes! Yes! Yes!
Everybody is very excited that you started the game off with the correct answer, Bob. Very good. Bob is on the board. Tom, you like that one?
I guess, yeah.
Sure you did. Who doesn't like Meg Ryan having a fake orgasm in a deli? But that's neither here nor there. We go to Mark for Mark's question. Mark, are you ready?
Yes.
Okay. Mark, who wrote the Star Spangled Banner? Who wrote the Star Spangled Banner?
I'm trying to remember her name. Betsy Ross.
That is incorrect, and that means, Bob, you have a chance to steal. I'll repeat the question. Who wrote the Star Spangled Banner?
Well, it was Francis Scott Key.
Was it indeed Francis Scott Key?
Good job. Keep up the good work.
Yes, it was. Bob is back on the board. Tom, we finished one round of this game. Do you know what the score is?
2-0.
Two to nothing
for Bob.
Yeah, wow, you threw a little Southern accent in there. I liked it. Channeling Yeehaw. Brad Paisley. Yes, it's Bob is leading 2-0. And since Bob stole that question, we stay with Bob. Bob, here we go. Who was the 16th president of the United States? Tom rolling his eyes, thinking if Bob does. And you know what? This is a multiple choice question. Should it be, Tom? I look to the judges.
No, but
all right,
as you like.
Well, I have to defer to the judges. Bob, who was the 16th president of the United States?
I'm going to say it was the land of Lincoln's Abraham Lincoln.
I love that Bob.
That is correct.
That is correct. I like that Bob knew the answer, but he built drama.
I like the theatrics.
He did. It was very theatrical. That's we like contestants who put a little something extra. They're not just in it.
I have
to
do that in the courtroom.
Sure. Yes. Sway us. You know, my cousin Vinny. We're the judge. You got to sway us. I'm the jury. All right. We go back to Mark. Mark, you need to get on the board with this question. Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, this is here we go. This is a multiple choice question. Speaking of Abraham Lincoln, what play was Lincoln watching when he was assassinated? Was it A Midsummer Night's Dream, The King's Conspiracy, Our American Cousin, or Beatlemania? What play was Abraham Lincoln watching when he was assassinated? Was it A Midsummer Night's Dream, The King's Conspiracy, Our American Cousin, or Beatlemania?
I'm going to go with A.
A, Midsummer Night's Dream?
Yes.
That is incorrect, Mark. That means, Bob, you get a chance to steal. I'll repeat, what play was Abraham Lincoln watching when he was assassinated? Was it A Midsummer Night's Dream, The King's Conspiracy, Our American Cousin, or Beatlemania?
Our American Cousin.
Our American Cousin. Let's see what the judges say.
That is correct.
That is correct. Very good. Bob, you're taking a commanding lead. I'll let Tom make it official. What's the score now, Tom?
So that makes it 4-0.
4-0. And we come back to Bob. We stay on Bob because he stole that one. Bob, you have 4. If you get this right, you will win the game. If not, Mark will get a chance to steal and get on the board. Bob, are you ready?
I guess so.
Well, listen, I don't want to put you out. If you need a break, we'll talk about something else. Mark and I can talk about favorite pizza toppings. We'll figure out a time. If you know, let us know when you're back and you're ready to go, and we'll start.
I'm ready.
All right, here we go. In what month was John F. Kennedy assassinated? In what month was John F. Kennedy assassinated?
November.
November. Let's see if that's right. That is absolutely right. That gives you 5. Tom, make it official.
Bob wins uncontested. 5-0 over Mark.
5-0. Bob, congratulations. You made quick work of this. Mark, that's all right. Some days it's just not our day. I understand that. But let's go to the prize list, shall we? Because we have fabulous prizes for both our players, Tom. And people love fabulous prizes. So, Bob, here is your fabulous prize. You are also going to Ravinia. You get a pair of lawn tickets to Ravinia on July 21st to see Ghostbusters celebrating its 35th anniversary with the score performed live by the Chicago Symphony Orchestra. And you get to join our very own Dean Richards, who will lead a pre-concert discussion. People can get tickets at Ravinia.org. We're going to do that. And I'm going to throw this in, too, because it's Friday, and Bob, you know, got him all right. He did it fast. I'm going to give you a desktop indoor weather station brought to you by American Weather Makers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men. Visit AmericanWeatherMakers.com. So we're going to give you that. And, Mark, as a former pizza delivery guy, I am going to give you a Lou Malnati's gift certificate. Lou Malnati's, the home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations or order online at loumalnati's.com. So, Mark, you win, too. Everybody's a winner on the Overnight Arcade. Bob, thank you so much for playing. Congratulations on the big win. Mark, thank you for playing. And enjoy your prizes, gentlemen. Please hold on so that Tom can get all your information and get you your prizes. So there you go. That's the Overnight Arcade. It was very exciting, wasn't it, Tom? I know you'd been hearing it for years.
I had so much fun.
This one of those things, I can tell. You're jubilant. Your joy is nonstop in there. I can just see you bursting at the seams. You're busting at the buttons. You finally got to be, this is, you know, something we haven't
done. It's really been a career goal of mine, Brian.
Well, listen, this was something for the uninitiated. If you back when I used to do weekend overnights, I would do Friday into Saturday and Saturday into Sunday. Our Saturday show was very long, and every Sunday morning at 2 o'clock, we would do the overnight arcade. And I had for a long time, Christopher Michael was our newsman, and he would keep score. And then Cody, my producer, still to this day, Cody then would come up with crazy characters to give away the prizes. And Cody always would bring in special guests to be booth announcers. They were not special guests; they were just crazy characters that Cody would concoct. But there you go. The goofiest war had to be the War of 1812 from the 807. It was a war that just ended. No one won, no one lost, but each side declared a winner. They ended the war, and then the event to inspire the Star-Spangled Banner happened. When that war was over, thanks, that's from Canadian Bill. So thank you, Canadian Bill. And just a text that says John Quincy Adams. I'm not sure. I think maybe that was the Francis Scott Key answer, but I don't think so. So congratulations. That is the Overnight Arcade. We haven't done an overnight arcade in a long time. I think since last time I was in, usually if I'm in for Nick on a Friday morning, we will do one. So that was a lot of fun. We thank our players once again. Bob dominated that last round. I felt kind of bad for Mark, but sometimes, like I said, sometimes it's just not your day, you know, as they said on the waterfront, it's not your day, kid. Today's not your day. So enjoy your prizes, gentlemen. And Marilyn, congratulations on the first round win. So there you go. All right. Now, this is exciting because on the other side of the news, I had a chance to sit down with four-time Irish Olympian Sonia O'Sullivan. She is coming to town for a big event that is happening in the fall. She was in town for the kickoff event for the Great Pink Run. We will learn all about the Great Pink Run. We will learn all about Sonia's illustrious career as an Irish runner and all of that. And you will love her brogue. And this was very exciting. Her family and my family from the same county in Ireland. Even though it's the biggest county in Ireland, it was still exciting that we shared those common roots. All right, so we'll get to that after we get to the news, which we'll do right after this on 720 WGN. Brian Noonan. The figures say that 1 in 8 women will develop breast cancer in their lifetime. In Illinois, there are currently 11,300 new cases diagnosed every year. So as you can imagine, money for research is of the utmost importance. And we hear all the time, there's all kinds of runs, there's all kinds of walks. A new run is coming to Chicago in October, and this is a pioneering joint effort between Ireland and Chicago. It is the Great Pink Run, and the ambassador for the Great Pink Run, four-time Olympian. This is very exciting. Four-time Olympian Sonia O'Sullivan is in studio with me. Sonia, thanks very much for being here. Welcome.
Thank you very much. It's lovely to be here.
Now, is this your first time in Chicago, or have you been here before?
No, this is my first time.
So you came. The weather's pretty good. Summer actually came with you.
Yeah, it's been pretty good. It's not too hot. And,
yes.
Definitely not too cold. I've came from Australia, and in Melbourne, it's winter down there now.
Oh, is it really?
So I've been looking forward to getting away for a while.
Because I know you split your time between Ireland and Australia, correct?
I do, yeah.
And I told you this before we started, and this is just a little personal thing. My families come from the same county you were born in, Cork.
That's right, yeah. Cork is the biggest county in Ireland.
Yeah.
You know, we see ourselves as the real capital down there.
I think so, too.
So I'm from the southeast. And you're up the north. So.
Yes, yeah, Charleville and Milford are up in the north, but it's still all one county, and we're still all
Cork. The rebel county, you know.
Yeah, that's it. That's exactly right. So before we, let's just tell everybody the quick basic facts. The Great Pink Run is happening Saturday, October 5th, 2019, 9 a.m. at Diversey Harbor. You can go to greatpinkrun.com to get all the information, and also go to researchacure.com, because researchacure.com is the Chicago-based nonprofit that is teaming with the Great Pink Run to bring the run here. Now, you've been connected with the Great Pink Run since 2013. How did you get involved?
I got involved just through a friend of mine, and I was kind of, you know, not running as seriously as I used to.
Okay.
So getting a bit more involved in fun runs and charity events, and I actually met this friend of mine. He's an Olympian as well in rowing, Garrod Towey, and he was wearing a Great Pink Run t-shirt, and I said to him, that's a nice shirt. And he said, oh, he said, that's a run and it's coming up soon. He said, you know, maybe if you want, you can go over and I'll get you involved.
Very nice.
He was going himself that year. So I said, grand, I'll meet you and we'll go and do the run. And of course, I was thinking I wanted to go and, you know,
Win. Yeah, you're used to winning, which we'll get to in a minute.
Win and run a fast time. And I think I did manage to win the Great Pink Run once. And I'm not sure I did it the first year, but 1 year I did manage to win it. And I kind of thought, okay, I'm happy with that now. Now I can really just relax and enjoy it. I've kind of got that bit over with. So I've kind of seen it grow and evolve over the years, because that was still in the early days. It was just started in 2011. And, you know, when you say the Great Pink Run, a lot of people think, and breast cancer, people think it's a women's only run.
Right.
But this is for everybody, you know, and that's the big thing that I've always been driving, you know, when being a part of the run, is to encourage men and families so everybody can take part, sure. You know, so we don't have to have people standing on the sidelines, because you can run, you can walk, you can, you know, just get around.
That's a nice thing about these events. You can, even if you're not a championship runner, as you are, you can still get involved, and to get men and kids involved, because breast cancer doesn't only affect the person who is diagnosed with the disease, it affects their whole family. So why not get the entire family involved in the events that are helping to, you know, fund the research to hopefully end this?
Yeah, and that's what we see, is you see a lot of families getting together, you see friends getting together, and so they, you know, I think it's about 4 months away now when it'll be coming to here to Chicago, and so there's time for people to kind of say, oh, I'm going to do this, and does anyone want to come and do it with me? And, you know, you make a day out of it, and you just go out there and enjoy it, and, you know, a lot of time it's, you know, supporting someone that you know who's, you know, going through breast cancer, or, you know, you're just being a part of that and supporting them, and, you know, but you don't have to be either, you know.
Right.
But I think, you know, most people probably do know someone, family or friend, who has been affected.
You'd be pretty hard to press to find somebody who doesn't know somebody who's been affected by this. So it's good to get people involved and get them out in a fun way. The weather is still nice here in Chicago, so that's fun. Now, you had a big kickoff event Wednesday night. How was that?
We did. That was great. It was down there on
the theater on the lake,
looking out over the water, so just pretty close to the course. And it was great. We had a really good turnout. A lot of people turned up, and, you know, another way to spread the word and get the word out there for people to look forward to it in October.
Yeah, it's gonna be a great event. Why Chicago? Now, you know, obviously there's a huge Irish population here. Irish people in Chicago take their heritage very seriously, but it's nice to see the, you know, hands reaching across, and, you know, Ireland and Chicago getting together to fight this. What brought the Great Pink Run here?
Well, there was a couple of things. There was the connection between the University of Chicago here and then the Royal College of Surgeons. I think there was a conference in Dublin, and a few people who were over kind of got talking, and this became an idea. And, you know, these ideas that come about late at night when you've had a few drinks and, you know, when you're reminded of them the next day, then they evolve into, you know, something bigger, and, you know, you kind of think, oh, wow, yeah, no, we really got to do something with this. And, you know, the girls who work in Breast Cancer Ireland, you know, they're passionate about this. So, you know, when they see a new idea, you know, they want to go after it and to make it work. And, you know, they've been out here this week and working really hard, connecting with lots of different people, you know, in the medical areas, in the running areas, and, you know, just trying to touch a lot of different areas to, you know, get as many people involved as possible. And it's been fantastic, you know, how the people we've met so far, like me just being here a few days, you know, they're all embracing this run in a way as if, you know, it's part of it. And that's probably because of the Irish connection and Chicago being such an Irish city.
Yeah, we do take our Irish heritage, like I said, very seriously, and it is cool. In case you missed at the beginning, Research a Cure. If you go to researchacure.com, they are the local nonprofit that is kind of overseeing the run here, and all the proceeds from the entry fees go to Chicago Ludwig Center for I've been practicing this word and I can't get it. Metastasis Research or Metastasis Research and the Royal College of Surgeons in Ireland. So it's going to be terrific. And again, that is October 5th at 9 a.m. at Diversey Harbor. You can go to greatpinkrun.com or researchacure.com. All right, let's get into this running, because obviously you're a natural choice to be an ambassador for any sort of run. Because as I mentioned, a four-time Olympian, you came to America at 17 on a college scholarship.
I did.
How'd you end up at Villanova?
Villanova, well, you know, a bit like Chicago, there's a bit of an Irish connection in, yes, Villanova as well. And it was always joked there was an Irish pipeline, you know, of athletes
that was
coming to Villanova. And there was always, you know, down through the years, there's always in the 4-year cycles always been some Irish athlete in the college. And I was the very first Irish woman to go there.
Really?
And I suppose I went there because there was athletes who went before me, or, you know, some of the very well-known, successful athletes in Ireland. Ronnie Delaney, who is the only track runner who's won a gold medal at the Olympics.
Oh, wow.
Over 1,500 metres. Eamon Coughlin and Marcus O'Sullivan. So these are all people who I would have looked up to, you know, when I was growing up. And, you're trying to decide where to go, because back then in the 80s, that was a thing to do for Irish athletes, was to come to college in America.
Oh, was it really?
So the thing was, you know, you decide you're going, then you had to decide, okay, where am I going to go?
Yeah.
And so, you know, I saw how Villanova helped these athletes to be successful on the world stage and in the Olympics. And I kind of thought, well, maybe I'll give that a go as well and see how it works for the girls.
Is that a hard decision to leave your home country and come to America? And, you know, it's 17-year-olds are young, even though, you know, you're obviously an accomplished athlete at that point. It still had to be a little nerve-wracking, right?
I think it probably was, but I think probably for my parents more than me.
Okay.
You know, I think I was really all excited about it. And,
sure,
you know, when you grow up in a Cove is a small town, it's a bit bigger now than it was when I was growing up. We had about 10,000 people, so you pretty much knew everybody.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I just wanted to do something different. And
sure,
I was looking, I did a lot of training by myself. I ran around the field, like laps and laps and laps. And, you know, I was starting to become a bit more interested in training harder. And I looked at the statistics in a lot of different colleges, and the girls' team at Villanova was quite strong at the time. And I thought, well, I just want to go and train with some people who will help me to be a better athlete.
Now, do they come and find you, or do you or your high school coaches kind of solicit them and say, hey, we've got Sonia O'Sullivan. She can run like the wind. You should send somebody over here and check her out.
Well, I think, you know, some of the athletes in Ireland who would have went to Villanova, who would know the coaches, they would be kind of, you know, Chinese whispers going on.
Ah.
And the word would get back. And then eventually you do get contacted by the colleges. And then the coach will get you on the phone. And so my own daughter is going through the same process at the moment now. She's 17 years old at the moment, and she's in her final year of school in Australia.
Okay.
So she's been looking at different colleges. So
wow.
Now I'm on the other side.
Is she looking at U.S. colleges or European colleges?
U.S. as well, yeah. Yeah,
wow.
It's generally the U.S. colleges that would be well-known for the sports scholarship and having, you know, a really good setup that you can combine your academics and your sports and, you know, get the benefit from both.
And now, is she a runner as well, or is she in a different sport?
Yeah, no, she runs as well. She does. Yeah.
So is your husband a runner? No, he was a different kind of athlete.
He ran as well, but you know, not to a very high level. So he ran club athlete, and you know, he coaches a lot of athletes and manages athletes. So he's still involved in the sport.
Are you pushing your daughter toward Villanova?
I'd like to, but you know, she's got a mind of her own, and she's looking wide and far, you know. So.
Well, that's the thing. Well, I don't want to go where mom went.
No,
that's her thing, you know. I want to go somewhere else and make my own thing. Sonia O'Sullivan is in studio with me. She is the Breast Cancer Ireland Ambassador for the Great Pink Run. The Great Pink Run comes to Chicago October 5th at 9 a.m. You can go to greatpinkrun.com or researchacure.com to get all the information. We're going to take a quick break. I want to talk to you about the Olympics, because you did pretty well in Sydney. So we'll talk more with Sonia on the other side at 720 WGN. WGN. Sonia O'Sullivan is in the studio with me. She is the Breast Cancer Ireland ambassador for the Great Pink Run. The Great Pink Run started in Ireland. It is coming to Chicago Saturday, October 5th. Now, before we scare people off, Sonia, because we have talked a lot about Ireland. We have talked about our families being from the same county. We talked about Irish heritage. You don't have to be Irish to run in the Great Pink Run, do you?
No, you don't have to be Irish, but you might convert, you know, if you come over.
Well, that's fine. We welcome everybody.
There is a lot of Irish walking around the streets in Chicago. It's funny. I've been out for a run a few times and been stopped a couple of times by other Irish people out running.
Oh, yeah. Do they recognize you from?
Yeah,
from
strangely they do.
Success?
Yeah.
No, listen, you're a world class athlete. People know who you are. So, but we do want to clarify because you know the people in charge of the race are like, we don't want just Irish people there. We like the Irish people, but everybody can come.
Oh, absolutely, everybody, and you know the more the merrier. But yes. one special thing about it is that road races and events in Ireland, you know, they have a little bit of something special about them, something different, you know, than what you would usually get in your normal runs in other countries. Like, I don't know, it's just a good energy and buzz about it. I'm involved with some races in Australia and, you know, everybody says it's a very Irish kind of race.
Oh,
and
very
so
good.
You have to go there to experience it. And
so you don't have to be Irish, you don't have to know anybody Irish, but
if you want a bit of fun.
If you want to have fun and pretend you're Irish for the day, we're good with that too. All right. So we talked about Australia. You're splitting your time between Ireland and Australia. You had unbelievable success. Not unbelievable. You had terrific success at the Olympics in Sydney. You've been to the Olympics four times. You've been in Barcelona, Atlanta, Sydney, and Athens. But you did very well in Sydney.
I did. I managed to pick up a silver medal. It was my third Olympics, and I kind of went there probably thinking, you know, this now or never.
Okay.
I finished fourth in Barcelona in 3,000 meters. And, you know, when you finish fourth, you kind of think, you know, if I knew I was going to be fourth, then I would have made sure I got a medal.
Exactly.
I kind of surprised myself. And, you know, it was a great result, but you don't get... You know, you get no reward, really.
Right.
You know, you have nothing to show for it.
Except the fact that you were in the Olympics.
Yes.
Explain to a guy who is obviously not an elite athlete. You go and you make the Olympics, which to most people is like, that is unbelievable. We can't even imagine being an athlete at that level to make the Olympics. But for an athlete of your caliber, nothing short of being on that stand is a success, right? And does it even... Does it even drop down? Like you said, fourth place, you got nothing to show for it. What's the mentality once you get there? It's win or nothing, right?
You do everything you can to win. I know when I was in Sydney, because I didn't go so well in Atlanta, and then when I went to Sydney, I kind of thought, I just want to have a really good performance that I'm happy with. And so I didn't really put a number on it. I didn't say, I didn't have 1, 2, 3. I wasn't, you know... It wasn't all or nothing. I just wanted
to
go out there and
yourself.
I wanted to, you know, walk off the track knowing that I'd done everything I possibly could and, you know, get the best result I could. Because, you know, you've got, I think there's normally 12 other girls or 12 girls in total on the start line. And so they're all thinking the same thing.
Right.
So, you know, there's a lot of different things can go on out there and everybody is fit and ready to go.
Yeah.
So, you know, you have to have a little bit of luck on your side when out there as well, because you know everybody's capable of winning, but it just depends on how the race is run and you know which kind of tactics it favors.
I was gonna, what are the little subtle things that can change in a race, because you'd been running for years and years? What, when you say how the race is run, what does that mean? Because we hear that all the time when we watch the Olympics, but to an athlete, what does it mean?
Well, that depends on the distance as well. So for a middle distance event, which is what I would be doing, it could be really fast from the start, so then you got to be, like, you know, tuned in and in there, and a race like that will get rid of a few people pretty early on because not everybody will be willing to commit. I generally like the race that's kind of semi-committed from the start, so I didn't want to go as fast as possible from the start, but it's nice to get rid of a few people because then it's not too crowded and you know, you have the risk of falling down. But I just had always, the 5,000 meters was one of those races where you could lose a bit of concentration in the middle.
Yeah.
And then you lose the break when someone might take off. So I had to really have myself focused on concentrating on keeping up and getting to the point of maybe 600 meters to go. I knew if I was within range of the leaders with 600 meters to go, then I had every chance of you know, winning the race or, you know, getting up there on the podium.
It's amazing. And you did get on the podium for the 5,000 meter. You won the silver medal in Sydney in 2000. You were also, we're going to brag on you for a minute, five-time NCAA champion in cross country, the 3,000 meter and the 5,000 meter. World indoor 5,000 meter record while at Villanova. We mentioned four-time Olympian, 14-time Irish athletics champion. That's not too shabby. And you have the Irish world record for the 1,000 meter for up to a half marathon, and your fastest ever in the 2,000 meter outdoors. That record still stands?
Outdoors, it still stands. There's one girl has run a little bit faster indoors, but you know, it's easier to run fast indoors.
Yes.
There's no wind, and you got those banked tracks that spin you around.
When you watch somebody going in this out in this outdoor event, do you secretly hope they'll trip? Yeah, be honest, it's okay. Because you want to, that's pretty cool.
You hope that they start off a bit too fast, you know, and blow up at the end.
And burn it up.
Yeah.
Now, before I let you go, Sonia, I got to, because running is just something that's foreign to me. What was it when you were a little girl back in Cobe? What made you decide running's my thing?
I don't think I made my mind up that early. I think I joined the local running club. There wasn't very many other choice of sports for girls to do back then in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
So running was one of the few things that you could go with your friends and, you know, you get to go away to the races on the weekend.
Okay.
And so there was all these little mini adventures that you would go away on. And I suppose I won a few races, and then, you know, when you start winning races, then you kind of like the feeling of that, and, you know, you get everybody patting you on your back, and so, and then you lose a few races, and then you start to think, no, I like winning them, so I'm going to keep trying, and so, you know, you have to lose a few, I think, to make yourself better, because then you try a bit harder, and you work a bit harder to get back up there again, and then you're back up there again, and it's just that good feeling of winning and being competitive, probably the competitive instinct and, you know, wanting to get out there and compete and get a
and
good result.
Did your daughter start running because she saw you, or was it something like how you started where you just saw her, she just started running and that was it?
Well, I suppose we would have, you know, been around athletics, around running, and I was still competing when she was really young. So some of the races I would go to, there was kids' runs attached to them. So they would have ran a few times in those. And, so I have two daughters, Kira and Sophie. And so Kira's the oldest daughter, and she doesn't like to run at all. So we brought her to all the races. We did all the same things with her.
She just
but it just didn't kind of click with her. Whereas Sophie quite likes it. And I think she had some really good social circles in the the running, which is what I had as well when I was younger. And I think that's a really important thing to keep young kids involved in, you know, whether it's athletics or any other sport, is that they have their friends there. And so they're looking forward to going to meet their friends as much as they are to going for training or racing or whatever they're doing.
Very cool. Well, you will be back in Chicago in October for the Great Pink Run. The Great Pink Run is happening October 5th at 9 a.m. at Diversey Harbor in Chicago. You can go to greatpinkrun.com or researchacure.com. The proceeds that researchacure.com are collecting from entry fees are going to a joint venture between the Chicago Ludwig Center for Metastasis Research and the Royal College of Surgeons in Ireland to fund research to fight breast cancer. You don't have to be Irish to run, but you can run along with someone who is Irish, and you'll have that much more fun. So come on out. Sonia, it was great to meet you. I hope I see you again when you come back in October, and we'll get the word out and hopefully make this inaugural Great Pink Run in Chicago a huge success. Great to meet you. Thank you very much,
and thanks for your support.
My pleasure. All right, we'll do this, and then there's more. It's 720 WGN. Yeah, the final 2 hours really are the danger zone because I am unhinged, unleashed, and uninspired. That's not true. I am always inspired. Brian Noonan in for Nick D. Nick will be back Monday morning. Is that correct?
That is correct.
After his birthday celebration and his 4th of July vacation. So Nick will be back on Monday. Will there be movie reviews?
Oh, yeah.
Always
big
movie
reviews, especially for this
Spider-Man?
Week's.
So there's Spider-Man.
We'll have the Spider-Man.
The Spider-Man's getting reviewed.
We're going to have the Spider-Man, but more exciting for me and Nick, at least, is a review of Midsommar.
I don't know what that is.
You don't know about Midsommar?
I don't. Last night I learned about Rambo 5. Tonight I'll learn about Midsommar.
Well, did you hear about Hereditary?
I know it. Yeah, it's a horror Tony movie. Collette. Some sort of horror movie, right?
Yes.
I didn't see it, but I know, yeah.
It was a very good horror movie. Okay. And if you are so inclined to check it out, if you have Amazon Prime, it is available
okay.
as part of your subscription.
Oh, I do have Amazon Prime. Yeah. I'm very, well, you know.
A lot of good stuff on there. A lot of stuff you wouldn't expect.
I don't think I've ever watched anything on it. I use Amazon Prime just to ship stuff.
I'm going to give it a shot. They have an amazing video selection.
Really?
Anyway, yes. Hereditary was a horror film by Ari Aster, first time director for the first feature. It was a big success for him. Critically adored.
Yes, I knew everybody loved it.
It was one of the it's hands down to me one of the scariest movies I've ever seen. It really stuck with me. It freaks me out.
Can you give me a plot line?
A plot line. After the death of a family's matriarch.
Does that spoil it for me?
No, that's okay. That's the setup. That's the very beginning.
All right.
Basically, things start to happen that no one can seem to explain, and it's more or less a series of unfortunate events.
Oh, I love that series. Well, Lemony Snicket.
Well, sure. It's a series of very, very terrifying things that lead to a conclusion that no one sees coming.
Okay.
But Midsommar is the next film by Ari Aster. It's takes place in Sweden the Midsommar Festival, the longest day of the year.
Okay.
And again, it's a bunch of people go to this Midsommar Festival and things start going from bad to worse.
Oh.
All in broad daylight.
Ooh.
Yeah.
All right. So that's coming out this weekend. You guys are very excited about
it. Yeah. Nick is seeing it on Saturday.
Okay.
For his birthday. So
you'll
get to hear what he thinks on Monday morning.
Very nice. And are you looking forward to the new Spider-Man?
I'm kind of checked out of the Marvel movies, and not because it's not because I think Tom Holland is bad as Spider-Man. I think he's a great Spider-Man.
Yeah, I think he's a good Spider-Man.
I think he's no Tobey Maguire, but what can I say?
I concur. 100%.
It's just that I've been watching these. The first Iron Man came out when I was going into high school. That was the summer before I started high school.
Wow.
I know, right?
You are a baby.
Thanks.
You are very young.
But I've been watching these movies pretty much for a little over 10 years now.
Wow, yeah.
And I've
the Iron Man came out when I was getting my AARP card.
Yeah.
No,
that's back in 08.
Yeah. I went early.
So I can't watch any more superhero movies, even though they are very well made.
Good. Yeah.
I need something. Give me something fresh. Give me something different, and then maybe I'll pay attention.
Well, even with Spider-Man Homecoming, I didn't go to see it in the theaters.
Neither did I.
I was like, oh, wait. And then I, you know, when it came on, I forget if I pay-per-viewed or just waited until it came on, you know, cable.
I read boxed
it. I watched it. Yeah, I liked it. It was very good. I'll see this one, but I'm not clamoring to go to the theater to see it.
Exactly.
Because I kind of feel... Endgame was it. Endgame wrapped everything up for me.
Yeah.
Now, so I don't have the energy to start a whole new chapter in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Exactly.
Everything was tied up in a nice bow for me.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
To be fair, supposedly this is a nice epilogue. Based on reviews I've seen.
Oh, is that right?
It's more of an epilogue than it is. It's an epilogue that starts to set up new things, but
sure,
if you enjoyed Endgame and you want to see, you know, maybe there's you have a longing to see what the world is like now.
I always long to see what the world is like.
Yeah, that's going to be Spider-Man Far From Home. It's kind of saying this is aftermath of all this stuff that happened.
Because I have seen that the kids are all the kids who were gone when Thanos snapped his fingers. They missed 5 years. They took a gap 5 years. Like to do after high school.
Really find themselves.
Yeah, after 5 years, you better find yourself. But anyway, that makes sense. And I don't know what Mysterio is going to be up to.
I think it's fun that Jake Gyllenhaal is part of the
whole
thing.
Why
he's
not?
Cool.
Yeah, he's cool. And, you know, it's going to be fine. It's going to be fine.
You won't catch me rushing to the theater to see it.
No. And do I need to see more Jon Favreau as Happy? Knocking boots with Aunt May? I don't think that's not something
I'm just jealous of that.
Well, sure.
I'm like,
who is
he gets to hang out with literally one of the most beautiful people to ever be born, Marissa Tomei.
Yeah, she's not too shabby.
No.
Marissa Tomei. I just saw a story. You saw it on my list of things. She wants a sitcom now because she was in the All in the Family reboot, that live in front of a studio audience that Jimmy Kimmel and Norman Lear did, which I thought was terrific.
That's
she
fun,
played
yeah.
Edith Bunker, and now she's gotten a hankering to go back to her sitcom roots, because, you know, she started as a sitcom actress on A Different World with Lisa Bonet.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
She is. She wants to go back because she said she likes it and she gets to, it's stability and you get to stay in one place. But that's only if your sitcom's a hit. You know,
well,
if
you
your sitcom
know.
Gets picked up, then you get to stay in one place for a while.
Well, did you watch this one day at, or was it One Day at a Time on Netflix, or is that what it was called?
Yes, I did not watch it. With America for, no, it wasn't America Ferrara. She wasn't in that one.
I know Rita Moreno was
Rita
on
Moreno,
it.
Rita Moreno, right,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, she was on it. I believe it was One Day at a Time.
It was.
And it was a really big show in terms of people were really happy with it. They thought it was great. You know, it was on Netflix. And all of a sudden, Netflix decided to cut it short.
Well, Netflix is weird because they're throwing money at everything. And then all of a sudden, they'll pull the plug on something that's actually successful.
Right.
So I don't understand. I don't understand the Netflix business model other than we've got a ton of dough and we're going to just keep creating stuff.
Yeah. Let me tell you the critical response here to the One Day at a Time was originally a
Please
show
do.
By Norman Lear.
Yes. It was Ms. Romano and launched Valerie Bertinelli into the American consciousness.
Right.
Thank you, Norman. Mackenzie Phillips and Schneider was the creepy janitor or super of the building who had keys to everybody's apartment. It would just pop up in Ms. Romano's apartment.
Yeah.
Odd.
Yeah.
That Schneider.
But this is the revival. And
okay.
Season one on Netflix of One Day at a Time, the revival. 94% on Rotten Tomatoes.
That's pretty good.
That's great. Seasons two and three, both 100% favorable reviews.
Okay, well, then that makes sense to get rid of it.
Yeah, exactly. That's such the weird thing. But it has been saved. It got saved by Pop, which is a CBS-owned cable network. And they had a
is
recent
it a real
hit.
Thing?
Yeah. You know that show with Eugene Levy?
Oh, S. Creek?
S. Creek, yeah. I don't want to say the...
Yeah, I don't know if we can say
people
it.
People have said it on the air. I'm not going to say it.
I'll say Schmitz Creek.
Yeah, Schmitz Creek.
Schmitz Creek.
That was a huge hit for them.
Okay.
Over at Pops, and now they're going to take on One Day at a Time and hopefully grow the network.
I've heard wonderful things about that Eugene Levy show. I don't know where that network is. I'm sure it's somewhere on my DirecTV if I went through every channel on the cable guide. It took me a long time to find the Paramount Network.
Formerly known as Spike TV.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
Because last year, Yellowstone premiered, the Kevin Costner vehicle.
Right.
Which is very good.
It's getting a second season.
Yeah, the second season started already. Yeah. It's very nice. But I was like, Paramount Network, I've never heard of it. And then I go, all right, I got to start at 200 because that's where CNN is. And I know everything.
Yeah.
It's between 200 and 500 because that's where HBO is. All right. So now I got to go to 201. And finally I get to the Paramount Network. I still don't know what channel it is. But since
gotta write it down.
Well, no, I DVR it, so now I just have to go to my list. It's very
there's too many networks trying to do their own thing. It's killing me.
Right, and everybody's coming up. You know, everybody's trying to come up with new, good original programming, and some of it is. And Netflix, Netflix has some good stuff.
Yeah.
Stranger Things, the third season just came out.
Yeah,
so I like the first two seasons, but then there's a lot of stuff that's garbage. That I'm like,
oh, total crap.
Yeah. It's like, this would have never, there's a reason this was never made on the networks because I started watching this thing with Josh Groban and Tony Danza because it was recommended because I watched somebody. It was The Good Cop or something, I think it was called. I made it through two episodes and I went, this is awful. Because Tony Danza is his dad and he's a rogue cop who was forced to retire. And Josh Groban is his son, and he's a straight-laced cop, and they clash because Tony Danza's character can't be contained in a box.
And it was canceled after one season.
Well, I didn't make it through. Yeah. It was canceled by me after two episodes. I did like the one with Michael Douglas and Alan Arkin.
Oh, that was the Comiskey Method or something
yes,
like that?
Yes, the Comiskey Method. And I was like, oh, I like watching really old guys do TV. That was fun. But then I never watched Frankie and June. With Lily Tomlin and Jane Fonda.
Yeah.
And Martin Sheen. I haven't seen that one. That's supposed to be good. I don't know.
There's just too many choices.
Yes.
I kind of want someone to... I'm all for people choosing what they want to watch. If you want to strike out and find some really weird stuff, that's great. If you want to pay for Showtime so you can watch the Twin Peaks The Return, which was excellent.
Oh, I didn't watch it.
Oh, it's crazy.
But I get Showtime television. So I can see Ray Donovan.
Yeah. And I mean, there's stuff out there that maybe not a ton of people watch. You know, right. You're not getting Game of Thrones numbers on Ray Donovan.
No, you're not.
But there's enough of a fan base to keep it going.
Yeah.
And really, as long as people are subscribing, it behooves Showtime to just make it. But at the same time, did we really need a dark revival of Sabrina?
No.
Even though I thought it was pretty good.
And everybody who's ever done stand-up does not need a Netflix special.
No.
Oh, my goodness. That's why I got back into stand-up, so I could get a Netflix special.
Because
they're giving money
to
everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not that tough. I've got, you know, 45 minutes. Strong stuff. That's fine.
But you have to really admire the fact that Netflix is at least just throwing money at pretty much any idea. Because
right. Yeah.
It's like, you know what? There might be some shows that would never get made. They would have never been made.
Sure.
And yet they're good ideas. They're just a little offbeat.
Yeah.
There's a show on Netflix called Maniac. It's a limited series. It's got Jonah Hill.
Oh, I've
and
seen the
Emma
promos
Stone.
For it. I never watched it.
Yeah. It's totally bonkers. It's totally weird. Very strange. Never would have made network television. Maybe an HBO, I'd say. Maybe a premium cable network. But it is a very inventive show at the very least. It's not my super duper favorite, but it was directed by this guy, Cary Fukunaga.
It's not Safe Haven.
Well, he's
and
now
you would say the name of the Eugene Levy show?
Stop it.
All right.
You're kidding me, man. You gotta be kidding me. But now he's directing Bond 25.
Really?
Yeah. He's this Cary Fukunaga guy. He did True Detective.
Oh, I like True Detective.
He did the first season of True Detective.
That first season of True Detective
is amazing.
Great.
And then he did Maniac.
The last season was good.
I thought it was pretty good.
The last season was good. The second season, not so good.
No.
I thought Vince Vaughn, sorry.
Yeah. No, third season was okay.
Big-time mobster Vince Vaughn. That didn't work for me.
No. You don't believe him as a mean guy?
No. Not really.
Only he's got to be either the dude from Swingers or.
He had a little gravitas to him. It's just the whole thing. I didn't care for the season. It was not my thing.
Not your forte.
No, it was not my ballywick.
is that the term?
No, it's one I use. I don't know if it fits. It might not be. No, because ballywick was completely misused by me right there. Ballywick is usually your expertise.
Ah, I see.
You know, so it was not my thing. All right, let's take a quick break because there were things going on in my neighborhood tonight that terrified me. I'm getting texts that things are still going on in people's neighborhoods that are terrifying. And maybe we need, as Illinoisans, we need to make a change. We'll get to all of that after this. It's almost like a Fly Jam Friday song. Was this a request?
Yeah, we've got a couple of requests. I know it's not the usual Friday features day since Nick's not here, but it doesn't hurt to have a few Fly Jams.
No, I don't.
Friday.
Like I said, my neighbors were playing Fly Jams today at their barbecue, and I was digging it. Oh, girl. I like that one very much. Speaking of the neighborhood, now the 4th of July is technically over, and yet fireworks will continue to blow up probably into next week, into the midweek next week. This I just saw a text from somebody saying they're still hearing fireworks going off on the southeast side. So things are going, people are going crazy. And this year, I'm in a new neighborhood. I have never heard, and I'm not exaggerating. I'm not trying to be, this guy's going. I have never heard so many amateur fireworks going off in my life. And I used to live, when we were first married, I had a house in Calumet City, which was a block from the Indiana border. And we used to think that was bad because it was pretty much lawless Old West time. Right on the, it was like, well, we were living in a border town. And you know what happens in border towns. Nothing good ever happens in a border town. So we would, you know, every 4th of July that we lived there, it was insane. So much so that one year, we were sitting in the family room, and something blew up outside so big that it shook the house and cracked the glass in one of our pictures. I am not exaggerating. We were sitting there. We hear this boom, this loud concussion explosion, and I had this James Dean Boulevard of Broken Dreams framed print, and it started to shake, and the glass cracked. it was, I was like, okay, this is, if people are setting off Claymore mines outside, we really should look into another neighborhood.
I was going to say, what's the danger close on that one?
I don't know. It was insanity. It was just insanity. Did you fall off your chair?
No, I'm tying my shoe.
You said something, and then all of a sudden you were gone. I was like, oh, no. I have to check on Tom. Folks, I'm sorry. I had to check on Tom. I was very, he said something, and then you were gone. But you're okay? Your shoe came untied?
Yeah.
All right, that's fine. I just want to check. I'm always worried about people. So that was so now, you know, we've lived in various places. We've lived in California. We lived in different places here. And now we're in this new neighborhood. And tonight, everything started at about, I want to say, 6:30, 7 o'clock. And there were things blowing up everywhere. And they ranged in sound from where you could tell a couple things are just little firecrackers, you know. You hear the, and then you would hear the big explosions. But it was going crazy. And I actually, I've never been worried before about amateur fireworks, but there were so many of them that I did start to get a little panicked. I was like, all right, this is crazy. There's, you know, I'm sitting in the living room, and in one of the pictures in the dining room, I can see from the alley reflections of things blowing up. I'm like, this is getting close. I got up and I looked out the back door, and there was a plume of smoke rising from in front of the next door neighbor's garage. I was like, I'm not even going to go out and investigate this, because if I go out, I could be hit by shrapnel. There could be some sort of thing falling out of the sky, flaming meteors. So that leads me to this point, and my question, I'll ask you, Tom, and then I'll ask everybody, should we start in Illinois legalizing fireworks? And I started thinking about this because Darlene Glenton had a column in the Tribune today. And it basically says, hey, listen, fireworks are illegal in Illinois, right? Sure they are. But if my neighborhood is any indication, the entire state has given the middle finger to this law. Said, you know what? Screw you, state of Illinois. We are going to blow up whatever we want to blow up. So consumer fireworks, if you don't know, have been banned since 1942 here in Illinois. And that hasn't really stopped anybody. Because you know as well as I do, either your neighbor is going to Indiana and you're giving them a wad of cash and they're coming back with a truckload of explosives, or you're going yourself, or you're going to Wisconsin, wherever it is, your state of choice for fireworks purchasing. And I love the kind of fallacy that they create. When I lived in Indiana, we would go and buy fireworks. And you had to fill out a card, and then you got a little license that you were then a licensed fireworks person. I was like, really? All I had to do was sign my name. Yep, now you got a license. Go ahead and do your fireworks. And then they set up, it's shifty. You know, you got tents just popping up in abandoned parking lots. Yeah, come in and buy these things that are going to explode. I'm sure they're all above board and very safe. It's lovely. That's why you only buy your fireworks from guys with three fingers, because you know their stuff works. That's the thing. If you're going to buy maybe a guy with an eye patch, three fingers, you know this guy's got quality merchandise, even if it's coming out of a rusted pickup truck and it's kind of there's a something oozing out of the bottom of the box. I'm sure it's fine. Just, you know, keep your kids away from it. Anyway. So, you could get fined up to $2,500, or you could get a year in prison in Illinois if you are caught with fireworks. Well, let's face it, the police have way more to do than actually going down every alley and arresting everybody who has fireworks, because it's not happening. So Darlene says, and I agree with her, hey, maybe it's time that we just make fireworks legal in this state and tax them. Because we tax everything in Illinois. We talked about the gas tax yesterday. We talked about the smoking tax. Everything's getting taxed. Why not bring some revenue into this state that people are bringing in? All the revenue is going to Indiana or Wisconsin. So it's a pain when people are blowing things up in your neighborhood. Sure it is, but it usually stops. So According to the American Pyrotechnics Association, consumer fireworks, bring in nearly $1 billion in sales across the country. In Indiana, They rake in about $2.5 million a year from the extra 5% fee they tack on fireworks sales on top of the 7% sales tax. So if you're thinking about it, other states that have banned fireworks have jumped on the bandwagon. Iowa and Pennsylvania. Officials in Pennsylvania say their 12% tax on fireworks has generated more than $8.2 million. So the question is, why is Illinois looking this gift horse in the mouth? This is money. People are spending this money. You can, all right, it's dangerous, Brian. You know, fireworks, you just made a joke about a guy with three fingers. Yes, fireworks are very dangerous. So I'm not saying everyone should buy them. But let's be honest, so many are being bought in this state. Why not keep the money here? If people are going to blow themselves up, let us at least make a little money off it. Well, why should Hoosiers get all the money from us blowing ourselves up? That's my question, America.
Well, it seems like people seem to have just, it's like with anything, like the casinos or marijuana for that matter, there seems to be some sort of quote-unquote moral objection to it.
Yeah, but this is not, fireworks are not a vice. I understand people
going, I think they are absolutely a vice.
Really?
Oh, yeah, they're a gateway drug, man.
All of a sudden,
you start experimenting
arson?
With, yeah, a little arson, maybe a little soap and napalm.
I will say, my cousin's wife, who is a lovely woman, she is a responsible, professional woman. When we lived in Cal City, we would have 4th of July parties because, again, it was a border town. And we were blowing up all kinds of stuff in the alley, all kinds of stuff. And she was outed as one of the biggest pyromaniacs I've ever met.
See, you never know.
You never know.
Literally never know. People will. Have you ever seen you've seen a child with a sparkler, right?
Very dangerous, but yes, I have.
They're terrifying.
Yeah.
They're like little gremlins.
Well, they're freaking out, man.
Like, they're like, they start poking each other with it.
Right. Sparklers are very dangerous. Everything's dangerous. Walking across the street's dangerous. But we're doing it anyway. Smoking's dangerous. People are smoking. Driving too fast. I can't wait to drive too fast when I leave here tonight. We'll talk more about this on the other side. 312-981-7200. Hey, man, it's a hot take. Yeah, just like a talk show. Anyway, we'll screw that up. But all right, we're going to do that after we do the news, which we will do right after this on WGN. Nick will be back on Monday morning. All right, we're talking about fireworks. Two things. One, I want to know what was going on in your neighborhood today, because my neighborhood was, to use the word war zone, kind of diminishes the horrors of war, but the sounds was like, this was nonstop, to the point I had never heard anything like this before. It was crazy. But I will say, the pheromone diffuser that I got to keep the dogs calm, the dogs were sleeping right through it. I was like, whatever these pheromones are that are being pumped into my house, the dogs were calm, which was great because this was rough. Kelly texts in from the 773. The neighbors were lighting stuff in the street. They got orange construction barrels from somewhere to stop people from coming down the block. The M80s and M100s were setting off car alarms. That's too much. What do you need an M... I can see if you want to do, you know, the chrysanthemums and stuff that shoot in the air, but what's the joy of an M80 or an M100? It just, you know, boom. Oh, I want to see things that make me go, that's what I like about fireworks. I want to see the beautiful lights and sparkles coming through the sky.
The rich tapestry.
Yes, I want to create art in the sky. I don't want things to go, boom. We have enough potholes in this city. I don't need you creating any more. You know? I don't have a big monster truck. My car is bottoming out half the time anyway. So we need to do this. Now, I mentioned that Darlene Glanton in the Tribune had a column basically asking the question, why is Illinois just giving all this money to Indiana? And again, Indiana, they generate up to $2.5 million a year from the extra 5% fee it tacks on to fireworks sales on top of their 7% sales tax. So there is money to be made. And this is a very interesting statistic. The U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission says that 12,900 fireworks-related injuries were treated in emergency rooms across the country in 2017. Now, that is a lot. Nobody wants that many people getting injured. But, by comparison, 25,700 children were injured playing with toy balls the same year. So playing with a baseball, a softball, a big playground bouncy ball, you're more likely to get injured than you are with a firework.
Yeah, but what's the severity of the injury?
Well,
do they mention that?
It doesn't matter.
You're pulling that out of your keister.
Not the numbers.
The numbers, but it doesn't. You know it matters.
Well, of course it matters. But you have to, you know, you have to have strict quality standards for what's being manufactured, and then you have to tell people about safety. But again, there's a lot of things that are dangerous that we still do, and if we're going to tell everybody we don't have any money here in this state, and we're going to keep taxing us, pretty soon you're not going to be able to afford to drive to Indiana to get your fireworks because the gas tax is so high.
Right.
So you might as well be able to walk down the street and buy fireworks. Now, the 779 says Walmart sells fireworks, but I'm sure they sell like snakes and sparklers. They're not selling big booming stuff because that's illegal in this state. And Walmart's not going to thumb their nose at the law and go, you know what? We brought in... All the way from Arkansas, we brought in a big truckload of explosives. Don't pay attention to the driver who's smoking. He's fine. It's all good. Everything's dandy. Yeah, so Walmart does not, I don't think Walmart sells real fireworks.
I think it being legalized, that makes sense. I'm really kind of a laissez-faire sort of person when it comes to, like when they said making casinos, you know,
right,
a thing in Chicago, I'm like, yeah, why not?
The only thing
the downside is what?
I don't know. You get some degenerate gamblers. I love the word degenerate. I don't know why. I don't want to be a degenerate. I don't want to hang out with degenerates. I just like the word degenerate. When it's used as an adjective, whether it's a degenerate gambler, any degenerate, I just like it. In theory, again, on paper, not in real life. But the only thing with the when they legalized all the gambling and all the slots, my old town, all of a sudden, there were slot joints open everywhere. Every vacant storefront was a slot machine place. And I never saw anybody coming or going out of these joints. So I'm guessing there's a little, something's going on there, something shady.
You can say that about a fruit stand.
Well, no, I see people buying a papaya. I don't see, you know, I walk the dogs through town, I pass five of these slot machine joints, and there's nobody in there except the old woman who's behind the counter smoking, waiting for somebody to come in and buy, you know, a $2 Miller Lite and throw $50 in the slot machine. And they always have chalkboards out like they're trying to lure you in. Hey, we got drink specials. No.
Well, I guess I've never really, the only casinos I've ever been in were in Vegas.
Well, yeah.
I've never actually seen what... a degenerate slot.
Well, these slot places are not casinos. They're just storefronts with slot machines and a TV. And they got, a pot of coffee brewing in the back and a pop machine. And some of them sell liquor. You know, but
I want to do a field trip. I want to do a field trip for myself and see
it. Do you really?
Kind of. Well, I feel like it's a
casino at least has, a casino's got some character. It's got some pizzazz. You got the bright lights. You got nice carpeting.
Right, but I want to see, you know, if people are worried that all of a sudden your strip malls are going to be filled up with, like, these kind of crappy rundown places.
I'm telling you.
I would want to hear that art. If people are like, nah, dude, it's going to be an eyesore. I'd be like, okay, I want to see it for myself that these places actually exist. You're telling me they exist.
I'm telling you they exist.
I want to see it. I can't wait to check it out.
All right, go to Berwyn.
Berwyn.
Go to Berwyn. Home of Sven...
Oh, we lost him.
I got all excited. Hold on. Talk to him, Tom.
Talk to him about... Well, he's coughing. He's taking a big sip of water. A little too big of a sip, if you ask me.
No, I'm back. I'm fine. Don't worry about my health. I'm okay. It's only a lung. No need. I can make it through an hour 18 with one lung. It's fine. Somebody, so they've got these slot places open up, but that's not going to be the same as with fireworks. Fireworks, you're going to start selling them. The tax money's going to come rolling in, and everybody's going to be happy. And will some people get injured? Sure. But people get injured all the time. And at some point, you know, if you're going to be doing it anyway, which is, I don't like that argument, but it's the most rational argument. People are buying fireworks anyway. Why not keep the money here?
Right.
You know? It's like if people had to, anytime something is, it might actually cut down on the amount of fireworks. Because when things are things are forbidden, ooh, I used to get a big thrill out of crossing the line into Indiana and buying fireworks and then smuggling them back. I thought I was, you know, I thought
you're
I was
like
a moonshiner. I was like Smokey the Bandit. Jerry Reed, me and my dog were in the car and we'd go. I go, come on, Fred.
Eastbound and down.
Yeah, Jackie Gleason chased me. Only a block because there was, you could see my house from Indiana.
I'm going to barbecue your ass in molasses.
I want a Diablo sandwich and a Dr. Pepper. And make it snappy, I'm in a GD hurry. Thank you, nice lady. I've never had a Diablo sandwich, and that's the one line from Smokey the Bandit I cannot get out of my head, and I don't know what a Diablo sandwich is. But I know it goes good with a Dr. Pepper, and you better make it snappy because I'm in a GD hurry.
There you go.
Thank you, nice lady.
But when it comes to the injuries,
what?
I mean, you said people get injured all
the time. People are injured now. People are getting injured.
Right.
I'm sure somebody blew their hand off tonight.
Right, but
somebody took a mortar to their chest because they were like, I don't think it went off. And I don't know why everybody who sets off fireworks sounds like that, but in my mind they do. Even when I set off fireworks, I sounded like that. And I'll be honest, I had a healthy fear of all these fireworks that we set off. We had buckets of water all around. We would, everybody, unless you were lighting the firework, you were way back. And then it was only the people with the long lighters, and you'd light and run. But there's always people who are like, that didn't go off. Let me go peek in. Bloom. That's how you get hurt. Stupid people get hurt. Smart people, you're smart enough to know, don't point it at your face.
Yeah.
Don't bend over it. Mm-hmm. If it doesn't go off, you know what? Turn the hose on it. I know you spent $30 on it, but it didn't go off. And it's better to just waste the $30 than try to blow yourself up. So, in a way, are we really doing that much harm? Because we're, you know, you're kind of getting rid of dumb people.
Wow.
That's
social Darwinism is a real kick in
sometimes,
the keister.
Sometimes you have to take the hard stand, Tom. And if people are going to blow themselves up, who am I to stop them?
I don't know, a smart person.
Right. Who's not going to blow himself up?
I would like to cut down on the number of people blowing their fingers off.
Well, sure, I would too.
And I'm not saying that there's going to be a sudden uptick of people blowing their fingers off. There's plenty. I would say a good majority of people use fireworks more or less how they're supposed to be used.
Yes.
They know to run. They know to get out of the way. They know what to point the end that blows up.
Right.
I feel some sort of sympathy for the layman.
I feel sorry for somebody if they blow their fingers off. I do. I don't wish that on anybody. But let's not pretend that just because it's against the law, nobody here is setting off fireworks.
No, oh, yeah, it's going to happen.
Nobody is setting them off. There's not too many states that still have them illegal. Illinois is one for whatever reason. You know, for some reason, it's one of those laws that is on the books and people are like, yeah, we're going to keep that for public safety. But you're not enforcing it. So if you're not enforcing it, is it really a law?
And, yeah.
But
that's true.
We don't have enough police officers to write those tickets. Because, listen, tonight we know at Navy Pier we needed law enforcement because there was the stabbings.
Yes.
On any given night, in any given neighborhood of this city or in any suburb, there are a lot of really important things that the police need to do. Are they going to come down the alley and write a ticket for somebody who's got a Roman candle and then have to go three doors down and write another? All they'd be doing is writing tickets. There's not enough manpower.
That's city revenue.
That's city revenue, but then you've wasted the revenue because you have to double the amount of officers on the street.
That's true.
And even,
I see plenty of officers. They'll sit and watch, and I don't blame them.
Sure,
I remember I went to 4th of July over at Pratt Beach in Rogers Park, and there's tons of people out there. They're sending off fireworks, just full on. There's a big long pier. Yeah. People are just shooting them off, all you know, like crazy people. And the cops are just kind of there to make sure that no one gets hurt,
right?
And if anybody does get hurt, they can at least get medical attention.
Exactly.
Which
or they
I think
confiscate them and then have their own big cop fireworks show.
Which I fully believe that happens.
Oh, I know
that's
that
a conspiracy.
Happens.
But I do appreciate the fact that they decided to take a certain hierarchy of needs. Yes, they can go and write a ticket for literally everybody on this beach setting off fireworks, but is it a better use of their time to just try and protect people? I think, and if someone does get hurt, they can at least administer some sort of... That's why I don't mind them not writing the tickets.
Right.
Because they know they don't have the manpower. You're totally right.
Yeah,
they don't have the manpower. And they're going with the hierarchy of needs and saying, you know what? Let's just make sure no one gets hurt.
Right.
And they did a pretty good job of that, as far as I could tell. No one was screaming with a stump on the beach. You know, they weren't... You know, they at least if they saw someone messing around, they were like, hey, you specifically, stop
being an idiot.
Yeah.
I understand the need or the desire to keep everybody safe. We all want to keep everybody safe, but that is an illusion. It is an illusion that is never going to be completely taken care of. We can't keep everybody safe all the time. So you have to look, you were mentioning the hierarchy of needs. You also have to look at this is the reality of the situation. Every year from the end of June to the first week of July, this state is overrun with people using fireworks that they brought in from somewhere else. We don't have enforcement of the law. We don't have enough people to enforce the law. Why not then just say, okay, you know what? We're taking this law off the books. Now it's legal to sell in Illinois. We are going to regulate the people who sell it. We are going to tax them. We are going to tax the people who buy it. And we are going to take this money and put it toward things that we really need in this state, which is a lot. Because the pie-in-the-sky dream of, well, if we make fireworks illegal, no one will have fireworks, has failed. And it is not, you're not putting the genie back in the bottle. It's done. We're past it. Fireworks are here to stay. From the 773, when I was a kid back in the 70s, my neighbor taped 3 spray paint cans together with a silver salute in the middle and placed it under the Dan Ryan. Wow. Yikes. Don't try this at home. So we've got, how many people remember fireworks in Soldier Field in the early 50s? They were quite different. That from Ernie. I do not know. I went to get milk and it cost me $400. I love the slot machines. I like that from the 630. I live in Indiana on the Indiana-Illinois border. I went to the fireworks store yesterday and half of the cars in the lot had Illinois plates. That from Zach. Of course they did.
No, it makes sense. People are doing what they've been doing for decades.
All right, let's take a quick break. And then we got some calls. We got some more texts. We'll get to all of that. Your thoughts. Do we make fireworks illegal in Illinois and just cash in on something that people are doing anyway? Yeah, we should. I thought you'd be playing Katy Perry's Fireworks.
That'd be too easy, Brian.
That's too easy.
That'd be the low-hanging fruit.
Listen, sometimes you get the low-hanging fruit. 312-981-7200. Should Illinois just throw up its hands and say, you know what, so many people are using fireworks. We're just going to make them legal, and we're going to cash in on the revenue. I say yes. What do you say? Robert's been hanging on. Hi, Robert.
Good morning, mate. Hey, absolutely. Illinois, you can drive your motorcycle without a helmet.
Mm-hmm.
There's your mobile donor. You go into Wisconsin, Michigan, Indiana, you have to have a helmet. So why not legalize fireworks? And besides, the best fireworks are not in Indiana, they're in Tennessee, because they give you more gunpowder in those.
Oh, is that right?
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Okay.
So you got to remember, you're only allowed a certain amount of gunpowder
right.
in Indiana. Tennessee, that's, you know, or go online to China.
Tom buys online fireworks.
Yeah, if I'm gonna get fireworks, I might as well get the most
bang for your buck.
Yeah, exactly. Literally,
absolutely.
All right,
absolutely. Well, good show though, mate. But again, Illinois is goofy. You can drive a motorcycle, no helmet. That means, you know, and I don't know about anyone else. I've ridden motorcycles my whole life. I've always worn a helmet.
Yeah.
Okay, but I wear proper gear. I like the guys who wear a helmet and then ride a motorcycle with shorts and short sleeve shirts on or no
well,
shirt.
Well, sure, then at least their brain is still functioning as their body is scraped to shreds with road rash.
Well, yeah, you know, this way you can have an open casket funeral. All right, great
Thanks
show,
for the
mate.
Call, Robert. Take care. Bye-bye. Oh, man.
Woof.
But he's right.
He's not. Yeah, he's not wrong.
Oh,
he's
man. Can I? I'll sidebar. I'm going to piggyback onto Robert's call. Motorcyclist tonight on the Eisenhower coming in. Shorts. Girlfriend on the back. Nobody had helmets. And he was weaving so far around in the lanes, he came within inches of my car. And when I beeped, he just looked at me and pointed at the white line. I'm like, yeah, but your handlebar was inches from my door. Because you're trying to stay balanced in stop-and-go traffic instead of just putting your feet down and waiting and taking off again.
Here's what always blows my mind. So is it legal for motorcycles to weave in through traffic? Are they allowed to do that?
They can change lanes. They cannot drive in the middle of the lanes. Could do that when we lived in Los Angeles. You could do that. They can shoot up the middle.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that was horrible. Horrible. Because you always think, you know, you look quick, you're going to change lanes, and then all of a sudden this motorcycle comes flying up out of nowhere. It's like, uh-oh.
But in Illinois, they can't just ride the line if traffic is bad.
I don't think, no, they have to stay in the lane.
Yeah.
But again, another law that, you know, we're not enforcing. Like this new law that says if you touch your phone, even if you're not doing anything, if you're just holding it, now it's against the law, you get a ticket. And now it's a moving violation, not just a fine.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's, you know, now the law has been in effect the whole 3 days, but I have seen a ton of people with their phones in their hand. Still with the phones in their hand, not getting caught. So it goes back. Now, from the 262, Null sends a text. Hey, Brian, it just happened earlier this week. Some Philly Yahoo brought an M80 fireworks from another Yahoo on the street, handed it to his 9-year-old daughter. She's in the hospital in critical condition, missing two fingers. And that is a horrible, tragic story. Horrible. But is the firework to blame at that point? No. The idiot father who handed a firework, an M80, to a little kid, that's the person to blame. So, you know, we have to look, and there are gonna be horrible injuries. There's horrible injuries all the time in all kinds of things. And it's not like the law has stopped any of this from happening. So I'm on record. I say let's get this law off the books. Forget about it. Let's stop pretending that we're keeping everybody safe because we're not, and then just move on.
My question is,
yes,
where do you, for you when it comes to any sort of law? You know, obviously there are preventative laws out there that don't deal in fireworks or things. Sure. I think fireworks is kind of small potatoes, really, in the grand scheme of things. Where does a law? When would you want to institute a preventative law? Because there's a lot of
such as
a seatbelt. That's a preventative law.
Yes, and I'm not a big fan of that either.
Why?
Because we can't legislate intelligence.
No, I'm not saying that you have to.
But when you tell somebody you have to wear the seatbelt because it's good for you. Well, you know, I could cite, you know, if we could cite how many people are killed because they didn't wear a seatbelt, then you could say, then somebody is going to come out with numbers. Well, these are the people who died because they couldn't get out of their seatbelt, or this, you know, I'm a bigger person, I can't wear a seatbelt. I'm a pregnant woman, I shouldn't wear a seatbelt. I'm, you know, this, so, you know, stealing, murder, arson. Those kind of yes, we need laws. I'm not saying we need to live in a lawless society.
No.
But I'm also saying at some point, we don't need the government to be our moms and dads. And seatbelts are in a car for a reason. Rational people, of which there are not as many as there should be, know that the seatbelts serve a purpose. And you put them on. I'll be honest with you. When I was really big, I didn't wear a seatbelt. Because I was too confined. It didn't really fit. It was horrible. Then I lost weight. I immediately started putting my seatbelt on because I knew it was better for me. Did I put it on because there was a law? No, I put it on because I knew that if, God forbid, I'm in an accident, my chances of surviving are better because I have a seatbelt on. Now, am I smarter than a lot of people? Probably not. You know, I've got okay intelligence. I'm not saying I'm the smartest guy in the room. So if I can figure it out, most people should be able to figure it out.
On the flip side, for me, the only reason as a child I would wear a seatbelt is because, oh, it's the law. My mom would be, oh, it's the law. You have to wear a seatbelt. I was like, okay.
Yeah, but that's your mom trying to just make you do something because you're a kid.
I know, but
because little kids need to be told why. And little kids need to be told what to do. But are you a little kid
but
now?
But then you was that dude that raises adults that instinctively, when they get in a car, I do not get in a car without putting on a seatbelt.
If they took the law away, would you still wear your seatbelt?
Yes.
Of course you would.
Because it's been instinctive.
Right, because you were told it's safe. Why is it a law? Because it keeps you safe. Because
it's safe. I'm
okay,
like, cool.
But you don't.
So that's why it's a law.
Right, but you don't need that. Your mom could just say it's going to keep you safe. And the more that's drilled into you, put your seatbelt on. Like I told my daughter, put her seatbelt on. I never, when she was little, I never said it was a law. So put your seatbelt on. Safe. Nobody move. We don't move till the seatbelts are on. It was all because of safety. It wasn't because the man is watching. You know. Because Johnny Trooper is going to roll up beside us. No, it was because that's how you stay safe. And I think at some point we need to be a little more self-reliant and say, this is how I stay safe. I don't need you to tell me how to stay safe. All right, listen. We got I was all worked up. I'm all worked up.
You're sweating.
No, but you know what? This is very exciting. We are debuting a new feature before the end of the show. Friday Feel Good. We have some feel good stories. So that'll be a nice sorbet to end the show. But now we must go to the newsroom. Chicago. Oh no, we have to do this. Then we have to go to the newsroom. Hey, you didn't bring me in some 5-page weather report. We'll do it at 4:15. I know Pam's going to do the weather. She'll do it after this. All right. Brian Noonan in for Nick.
Pam's feeling the music right now.
I know. Pam's ready. Now she's all woken up. Wide awake.
Yeah,
she's got
cocaine,
her first.
Hell of a drug. Hell of a drug. Hell of a drug. Do you guys see that? I love some Chappelle show. Chappelle was awesome. Hell of a drug. Hell of a drug.
I was like,
Charlie
wow.
Murphy, Charlie Murphy, Charlie Murphy.
Wow, Pam's coming on at
4 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, she's ready to go.
Wake up. If I got to be up, you know what? I say, 1 Corinthians 12:26, one member suffers, all members suffers with it.
Oh, we're not suffering. We've been here all night.
That's the one Bible verse I know.
We've been here all night.
That's true. So,
we're right. Well, it's so nice. You said you were a little sleepy before the news. Now you're dancing. Well, you want to talk about fireworks? You got things on your mind.
You see this? I had some of that Joe in the hallway, and all of a sudden it hit me.
Yeah, this radio station coffee sneaks up on you.
It does.
And all of a sudden you're like, hey, what?
Whoa.
The red light goes on. It's like, dance. Okay, I'm ready.
What's that music? You know, I was baited. You know, you guys have been baiting me all morning, honestly. Maybe you didn't know it.
Tom's been picking the good bump music today.
Okay, yeah, that was awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, now don't play any Brick House because I'm not sure what I will do. I can't be responsible for my actions when that's
She's
played.
Mighty, mighty.
That's right.
She's letting it all hang out.
Well, some hang out.
So you wanted to talk about the fireworks, Pam?
Yeah, because, you know, I'm from Indiana. So.
Yes, oh, yeah. So, you got, yeah, that's right. Tom, we got to go out. I got Pam brought me an order.
That's not true.
She's got it in the trunk of her car.
No,
cash
the car
only.
I drive now. We'll talk about that later.
She got it in the trunk of her car, the rag coming out of her gas tank. Everything's going to be fine.
Well, you know, you're right, though. Like, in Chicago, everybody says, you know, it's against the law, you know, in Illinois, blah, blah, blah. But I'm telling you, I work most of the holidays where fireworks are displayed. And every time I cross that bridge going over back into Indiana, I see nothing but haze. There's this firework haze that's over the whole area. And it's not the fireworks that are coming from, you know, sanctioned events. It's from neighborhoods.
Right.
You can see them on the horizon. And, you know, it's pretty, but I know it's dangerous.
It is, people are buying them.
True.
People are going over there, and they're spending their money, so why not keep it here?
Right, and on the TV side, that's a story you can count on the 4th of July. Let's go over and see how many people from Illinois are bringing fireworks back across.
And it's that wink-wink, nudge-nudge kind of law.
Yeah.
Well, if we can find you, are you gonna? Nope. Okay, then. Light me up. Our last caller talked about Kentucky. That's true, because when I was on the road all the time, I would drive down, and as you come, I think it's just north of Chattanooga. You come out of the mountains, and it's like the Disneyland of fireworks. On both sides of the interstate, there's these giant firework places, and it's amazing. It's amazing that all these people from the hills are making all these explosives, and yet There they are, sitting on the porch with their jug with the three X's on it. They're getting all liquored up.
Not
they're drinking Shine. And
I got to ask you, Brian, is your only image of a person from the South from like Looney Tunes?
Yep.
Is everybody Foghorn Leghorn?
That's right. Everybody's Foghorn Leghorn or the Hillbilly Bears. That's it. Boy. That's everybody from the South. And I've spent a lot of time in the South. So when I say that, I speak from experience. More often than not, my caricature is correct. You know. Yeah, I'm not talking about, you know, you go into a cosmopolitan city, you go into Atlanta, you get mostly people who move from the north. You know, you go into a lot of places in Florida, it's mostly people who are not from Florida. You know, so the Carolinas are a little different, but you can't tell me that Alabama is, you know, unless you're in the big city, there's, you know, but it's the same as if you're in Southern Illinois or, you know, anywhere.
I drive fast through Alabama.
Do you?
I'll say that much. I drive fast.
I would not drive fast through Alabama.
Why?
Because I don't want to do time in Alabama.
Put you on the chain gang.
That's right.
I feel like every offense in Alabama is punished by the chain gang.
Right.
Chain gang.
I saw Cool Head Luke. I can't eat 50 eggs. There's not a chance I'm going to be working in the hot, hot sun and then try to get a cold pop at the end of the day with a nickel. Now, I can't do it. I don't look good in horizontal stripes. It's just, it's a whole bad thing for me. So I have to avoid prison in the South at all costs.
Do you think I could request vertical? Is it vertical stripes that are slimming?
Wait,
one of those is slimming.
Vertical, I think, vertical is more slimming.
All right, because I'd be like, well, if I get done for speeding in Alabama, I'll just say, well, can I at least get vertical stripes, sir? I want to look good on the chain gang.
You may be able to get out of your ticket in Alabama if you have a riddle. Officer, let me ask you this. A train leaves Chicago going 60 miles an hour. You know, you throw a word problem at them, and while they're trying to cipher it, then you can skedaddle.
Yeah, you go. You slide over the hood of your car, and he's like, let's go, Bo.
Vroom. Yeah, the General Lee just takes off. You're spitting gravel all over.
Waylon Jennings on the radio.
Why wouldn't you have Waylon Jennings on the radio? I can go to Indiana, show my ID, get a gun, fireworks, cigs, booze, and many other things. Gas or a house, not get taxed. Well, there you go. If you don't have a law to tell someone to wear a helmet, why should you have a law to tell them to wear a seatbelt? That makes sense. That's true. You know, if we're gonna be a nanny state, then we got to be a nanny state. The hill people are from Ireland.
Well, they're Scotch Irish. Yeah, they're Ulsters. Listen, they're Ulster people.
There's Ulster people everywhere. There's hill people everywhere.
But they're mainly in the hills. That's what rednecks are. Are totally Scots-Irish.
Is that right?
Yeah, that's where they come from. It's from the Ulster region. Kicked out all the pig farmers from Scotland, sent them over to, you know, Northern Ireland.
Sure.
And then they came here.
All right, well, listen. I've got nothing. I love, rednecks are fun people.
They are.
And I like the South. I just, listen, sometimes we deal in stereotypes. And you know why stereotypes become common? Because a lot of times they're true.
They're also kind
of funny. And that's okay. And they're funny. And if, listen.
I love a good Chicago stereotype.
Sure, we got the only one I didn't like is super fans. I hate those super
fans. Wait, you don't like the Bill Swirsky super fans?
I hate those super fans.
Why?
I hate them.
Why?
I have never liked them. I've never found them funny. I find them annoying. I find it... Listen, I'm born and raised here. I've been around Bears fans my whole life. There's maybe six guys in this whole city who are like those idiots. And yet that comes to be the entire city's image. I just don't like it.
Well, it's better than the yuppies in River North. I take that over there.
Are there still yuppies? That's a very 80s term.
I think there are absolutely yuppies.
Really?
We don't use... I don't think the term is as popular, but it's the closest analogy I can think of to describe.
A young urban professional?
Yeah. I mean, that's what they are.
Sure.
They're people who...
Are you jealous?
Am I jealous? I mean, yeah. Would I love to have a bunch of money to throw around? Yeah,
who wouldn't?
I'd love a little extra income.
You know how we get a little more extra income?
Fireworks.
Legalized fireworks.
You want to open up a fireworks store?
I'm going to open up a firework and hemp store. It's going to be cannabis, hemp that I make from, you know, that
you
I make from the
little,
cannabis.
Little friendship bracelets.
Yeah, I'm going to make friendship bracelets, maybe an ankle bracelet, maybe, you know, and then I'll sell cannabis and fireworks.
And also there
and
will
I'll
be
have slot machines in there. Of course there'll be slot machines. And there'll be bootleg whiskey. Because I'm going to start bootlegging whiskey and selling cigarettes without state tax seals on
it. Can you, I mean, so it'll be like bathtub whiskey. It'll
sure, it's going to be a plum wine that I make in the toilet, just like when I was in the joint. So we're going to be selling all that.
It's an aged Merlot.
Just drink it. Now you won't go blind. You might be blurry for a while, but you'll get your sight back soon enough.
See, then I wouldn't mind moonshine and being legal.
What? Yeah.
If we're going to do the fireworks, I'm kind of
well, we already have legal booze.
Well, we have legal booze, but it's not moonshine.
Well, I'm sure you can make some moonshine.
You can't make your
Why
own.
Why would you want to make moonshine when we've got good booze that you can just wander down to your local corner liquor store and buy?
Because you'd have to drink so much Jack Daniels to blind yourself. With the moonshine, if you're making it at home.
If you really want to blind yourself, you got a pencil. Or a pen, if you're intent on blinding, if that's your goal, if the end game is, I want to blind myself, there's a lot easier and cheaper ways to do it than to say, I need to go out and get copious amounts of moonshine and then drive through the woods until I find a still, and blind myself that way. You can just fall on a pen, you know, somebody could hit you in the eye, you can go blind. I don't know why that's your. I don't know why every time you drink that has to be your end goal.
I'm not saying it is. I'm just saying that
it sounded like it was. It sounded like that's exactly what you were saying.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mama. No, I've disappointed
Mama,
you,
Mama.
I made you sad.
Don't cry. No, but we already have legal booze. We have legal cigarettes. We have a lot of legal things that will hurt us if we abuse them.
We've got legal Brian Noonan.
Yeah, that's well. For another, till the FCC gets these tapes, they go. Maybe we need to put a collar on this guy. Maybe we need to muzzle this guy. We can't have him, combine pot with smoke bombs in my store. Oh, that's a good idea too.
Surprise! You're stoned. Got him. Quickly, let's get out of here.
That's a beautiful way. That's law enforcement could defuse any situation. You know, you throw it instead of a concussion grenade that's going to scare the perpetrator when they're in a hostage situation. You throw in one of my patented pot smoke bombs, and then just you have to wait a few more minutes, but everybody's very mellow. And then all of a sudden, yeah, man, we give up. Sorry.
The perpetrator has been apprehended with a bag of flaming hot Cheetos.
That's it. All you got to do, once you throw in the bomb, you wait for about 20 minutes, and then you dangle Doritos outside. And then, and then just come right out.
Starving, man.
No more SWAT teams. You don't need big military assault weapons anymore. You need a pot smoke bomb and a bag of Doritos. Yeah. And all of a sudden, law enforcement is chill.
Easy.
Just an idea. I don't know.
Listen, America, we're solving your problems.
Eddie Johnson, you paying attention? Mayor Lightfoot, let's go. Call me in. I'll sit in a meeting. I've got ideas. I'm an idea man. I could make this city run like a well-oiled machine. It's not, I don't know what kind of machine.
A pot smoke machine.
Cotton gin. I don't know.
Cotton gin.
I'm going to make it run like a cotton gin machine that hasn't worked since the 1800s. Oh, my goodness. All right, let's take a quick break. We have an update. Update! We have an update on our ice cream licking lady that we talked about yesterday. So we've got that. And then a woman who tried to get revenge on her ex in a very dubious way. So a lot to get to before we get to Friday Feel Good. Oh, man, what are we going to do with all this? We got to get going. Keep on smiling. Oh, my goodness. We forgot to do the 87-day weather forecast, so I'm going to do it now because Tom worked hard. And if Tom works hard to put the weather forecast together, we should read it. Here is the forecast from the WGN Weather Center. Today, hot, humid. There aren't as many threatening adjectives as you had yesterday. That's unfortunate.
Yeah, no, with a vengeance.
Yeah, with a vengeance. Hot, humid, with a high in the low 90s, inland 80s near the lake. The heat index may reach 100 or higher away from the lake. Nighttime clouds, thunderstorms with localized downpours possible overnight. Warm, muggy, cooler by morning with a low in the mid-60s. For Saturday, a high near 80, cooler near the lake. Little cloudy, and overnight low in the mid-60s. Looking ahead to Sunday, mostly sunny, mild, much less humid, comfortable high in the upper 70s. Monday, mostly sunny, a little bit warmer with afternoon highs in the low 80s. And Tuesday, partly sunny, warmer, more humid. Chance of an isolated thunderstorm possible, high near 90. Right now it's 76 at O'Hare, 77 at Midway, and 76 along the lake. There we go. Yesterday, we were talking about this woman. She was all over. Oh, it went viral. She was licking ice cream at a grocery store. She took the top off a half gallon of Blue Bell tin roof ice cream. Then she licked it. And you could hear somebody encouraging her to put it back in the freezer, which she did. And then people went crazy when they saw the video. Rightfully so. They contacted Blue Bell and all of that. Well, police say that if caught, this woman faces charges of second-degree felony tampering. Second-degree felony tampering with a consumer product. There's a weird period in the middle of there. That carries 2 to 20 years behind bars and a possible fine of $10,000. And you know they're going to catch her. Because now the word gets out that there's this kind of punishment that could be metered out to her. Somebody's turning her in. Probably the person holding the phone that taped her licking the ice cream. Bluebell called the unsettling footage a, quote, malicious act, end quote, in a statement on its website. The ice cream maker said it inspected the freezer case that contained the licked ice cream, found the problematic tub, and removed all tin roof half gallons from the Lufkin Walmart. Oh, man. Lufkin, Texas, where tin roof ice cream goes to die. I enjoy a nice tin roof ice cream. Haven't had any in a long time, but it's a good one. Bluebell makes a nice ice cream. You ever had a Bluebell ice cream?
I have not, actually.
Yeah, they make a good ice cream.
And I'm really not much for ice cream. I like certain...
The more you talk, the less I know you.
What are you talking about?
Who doesn't like ice cream?
It's not that I don't like ice cream. It's just not my favorite.
Okay.
I like pie.
What are you, a key lime pie guy?
No.
Boysenberry?
No.
How do you not like key lime pie?
It's fine. I like
what, like apple, just plain old apple
I like
pie.
Apple,
a country apple.
I like strawberry rhubarb.
Nah, no, pass. Pass on strawberry rhubarb. For
why?
Me. I just don't like it.
Okay, well then, why you coming at me for not liking key lime pie?
Well, because I like key lime pie, so everybody should like key lime pie. You know, you go to any steakhouse, they don't have strawberry rhubarb. You know what they have on the menu? Key lime pie, because a lot of people like key lime pie.
Do they have apple pie?
Not usually. No, usually pie selections are mostly key lime. Maybe you get a coconut cream or a chocolate, some sort of chocolate pie.
Like a French.
Maybe a French silk or a chocolate cream.
All right, we have
common ground there. I like French silk.
And that's America right there.
That is, sure. We like French pies. I like a nice French apple pie. You ever had one of those?
No.
The crumb on top. It's more of a.
Great.
Yeah, it's kind of like an apple cobbler pie.
Okay.
It's delicious. Fantastic. All right, we've made up. See how easy that was? We talk it out, Tom. That's what we do. We just talk it out. Everything's fine. So they inspected the freezer. They took all the tin roof ice cream, not just the half gallon that the woman licked, but all of it. According to Bluebell, the safety of our ice cream is our highest priority, and we work hard to maintain the highest level of confidence of our customers. Food tampering is not a joke, and we will not tolerate tampering with our products. This woman is good. When she is caught, and she will be caught, they're not going to back off of this. Bluebell wants to see her behind bars because they don't need the. No company needs this bad publicity that some idiot in Lufkin, Texas is licking their ice cream and putting it back in the freezer. But leave it to Texas to take things to a whole other level because everything's bigger in Texas, including the reaction to ice cream licking. So a Walmart in Corpus Christi, Texas, is not taking any chances with its own ice cream stock. To protect the frozen foods, the store said it, quote, stationed an armed guard in front of its precious Bluebell freezer and posted a photo Wednesday of an employee holding a squirt gun. But then the photo was removed 18 hours later because I'm sure Walmart corporate went, we can't threaten people with even with squirt guns. We just have to hope that people in Corpus Christi aren't going to lick the ice cream and then put it back in the freezer. But according to them, at the Corpus Christi Walmart, they said, quote, we're guarding our Bluebell ice cream for your weekend party. What a great way to cool down in the hot Texas heat. I like that. I like the forward thinking of that Walmart manager or that frozen food manager at that Walmart in Corpus Christi.
Shout out to, you know, the lucky guy who gets to just stand there.
Yeah, that's
and
a great
guard
kid.
Ice cream, and I'm he's got a squirt gun.
Sure. He's loaded. He's probably got, you know. Maybe he's got another one of those sponge dart guns, too, in case they really need to take somebody down. But a squirt gun, I think that's hilarious.
Yeah.
You're lucky, because Texas, they could have just had a guy with a real gun standing there and made it a lot more menacing. At least this way, people are going to say, well, you know, I appreciate the effort, but I think everything's going to be fine. So, I don't know. Again, I just can't comprehend... I cannot comprehend doing something like this. Licking ice cream and then putting it back. Oh, Tom, we got somebody. Somebody wants to know about pecan pie. Where do you stand on pecan pie? I know you're on the phone. Thumbs up. Tom gives a thumbs up on pecan pie. Let's see. I was looking at this. Oh, something stupid happened in the USA. It's either Texas or Florida. Yeah, well, that's true. I'm surprised this story didn't come out of Florida. And probably everybody in Florida is like, oh, how did we get trounced on this? We should have been the ones. We should have been the ones to lick the ice cream and put it back. We can't let somebody from Texas get in there. Ron wants to jump on real quick about Bluebell. Hi, Ron.
Good morning, Brian. Brian, if you remember about 2 years ago, Bluebell had a big recall from salmonella poisoning.
Yes.
All over the United States.
Yes, I do remember that. So they are definitely not in the mood for any more bad publicity.
Well, I don't know about that. That's all everybody's been talking about for the last 2 weeks is Bluebell, Bluebell, Bluebell. It's a pretty good way to get your brand name all over the world, number one. And anything coming out of Texas, I would kind of check it first before I bought it anyway.
Wow! You're calling conspiracy on this?
Absolutely. I'm a conspiratorialist all the way.
So somebody in a boardroom at Bluebell, all these men in a dark room in dark suits, a cabal, if you will, an ice cream cabal, is they thought this all out and they said, you know what, we need to get our name out because people haven't been talking about this. They haven't been talking about how great we are since the salmonella scare. What can we do? We'll hire some patsy down in Texas where they got the patsy for the Kennedy killing, just like that. So maybe it's a Lee Harvey Oswald relative. I don't know, but
you're putting the pieces together for me.
Ron, this is, you know what? You've opened a whole new stream of thought for this. We're gonna examine this. We're going to stay on this story as only we here at WGN can, and we'll try to get to the bottom of it. But thank you, Ron, for opening our eyes.
You're welcome, Brian.
To what could be going on. Goodbye. This is, wow, Tom.
I'm pretty sure that was Oliver Stone. I don't know. That's an alias.
I don't know, but
Ron,
listen.
More like, yeah.
It makes, now that I start thinking about it, sure. I see a bunch of guys at the Bluebell boardroom. The cabal. Key lime pie is awesome. Rhubarb, ? Some farmer found a use for a mutant purple celery. Who eats that? Wow, Tom. People coming out hard on
my grits.
Wow, easy flow. Rhubarb. All right, rhubarb. Let's do... Ribby and rhubarb used to be the Sox mascots back in the day. Did you know that?
No, I'm not a Sox fan.
Well, that's too bad for you, too, then.
It is.
Jump back. Wow. Tom getting funky in the final portion of the program. Brian in for Nick. Nick will be back on Monday. Mark Carmen coming up with the opening bell at 5 o'clock. You ever had an ex try to seek vengeance on you, Tom, for breaking their heart?
No.
No, you're very lucky.
Yeah, no, it ended pretty well.
Really?
Well, you know, believe it or not, I'm a pretty nice guy.
Well, I have no question that you're a nice guy. I just have of the school of thought that relationships never end nicely.
You'd be shy. I still see, save for one, and we're going to leave that in the closet. But I still see all of my exes regularly.
Really? In the closet because you've stuffed her in a suitcase, dismembered her? Why, you know? Okay.
I will neither confirm nor deny.
Whenever I would break up with a woman, I never saw or spoke to her again.
It depends on the conditions of the breakup.
Though. All breakups are bad. That's why they're breakups.
I don't believe that. Well, I sincerely
you're a romantic.
Believe. Well, thank you. I sincerely believe that two people can go their own separate ways. And yes, there's always going to be a little bit of like, well, it's because you were at this or you could have done this. But really, if both people can grow up and be adults, they can realize that.
Well, there's your problem.
What?
Who are you talking to?
I don't know.
A guy who's not growing up and being
people who aren't blowing their hands off with fireworks, hopefully.
Yeah. And now, granted, I have not been in a situation where I had to break up with somebody for over 30 years. So
it's been
some
pretty
time.
Good ride here.
Yeah, it's been a run. You know, my wife hasn't wised up after all this time, so that's good. But this happened in Clearwater, Florida, because we love a good Florida news story. We just love them. Everything fun happens in Florida. So a woman goes into a restaurant, and she leaves a $5,000 tip. Oh, man, it makes the news. This is great. She was praised for her generosity. Everybody said she was God's gift to diners. She helped this this person out, this server, Ryan is his name, and he was going through some hard times. She had been going through some rough times. She had to put her dog down, and now this woman had given her a $5,000 tip. This was going to change Ryan's life. Everything was lovely. Well, as you can imagine, things are not always as they seem. So that woman has been arrested. Not Ryan, but the woman who left the tip. She has been arrested and charged with grand theft for allegedly using her boyfriend's credit card after he refused to buy her a plane ticket back to New York. I'm sure he wished he had sent her now. Would have been a lot cheaper than $5,000. Serena Wolf is her name. She's 24. She allegedly used her boyfriend's credit card without his knowledge after he would not buy her a plane ticket back home to Buffalo, New York. Listen, I've been to Buffalo. Lovely city. If I'm in Florida, I don't want to go back to Buffalo.
Yeah, I don't think people are generally itching to get back to
Buffalo. Who wants to shuffle off to Buffalo? Not me. Good wings, though, and that's true. I'm not making a joke. That's where they started, and I had good wings at Buffalo. And it's a fine city if you want to go see Niagara Falls. Interesting fact, very good Chinese restaurant on the Canadian side of the falls. If you're ever in Buffalo, just you're going across. Just, you know,
it's that Canadian Chinese fusion that really.
I was shocked, but it was one of the things. I was working there for a week, and people said, "Are you going to the falls?" I said, "Of course I'm going to the falls. What am I, an animal?" And they said, "Well, you got to go to the Canada side." And then when you go to the Canada side, you go down like four blocks, and there's this Chinese restaurant, and it's phenomenal. And so, being an adventurous American, I went in and I conquered Canada, and then I took their food. I pillaged the Chinese buffet, and it was delicious. So there you go. There's your little tip. Anyway, back to this woman. So he had put a hold on his credit card when he wouldn't buy her the ticket so that she wouldn't use it. But then he took it off, and that's when she got mad, and she allegedly took the card to leave a tip of $5,000 on a bill of $55.37. So what's fine? That's like 1,000%, 100% tip. 100%. No, that's 1,000% tip.
Yeah.
1,000% tip. It's not known if the server will get to keep the money. Of course they won't.
No, that's not.
Yes, the restaurant already paid out the server, but the boyfriend marked the charges fraudulent. So somebody's got to get that money back. So Ryan, the poor server who had to put her dog down, she doesn't get to keep that $5,000.
Yeah, and I feel bad for Ryan, but she's got to give it back.
Yes.
Because it was done in bad faith.
Yes, of course it was. It's stolen money.
Yeah.
You can't keep stolen money once you know it's stolen. Unless Ryan flew the coop. She got her $5,000 check or tip, and that was the amount of money she was looking for to get out of Clearwater.
Well, what if she was in on it? What if she knew?
Are you saying another conspiracy is popping up?
I'm not
saying
that
there's...
First
we have the Bluebell ice cream cabal, and now we're talking about some sort of three-way love triangle credit card scam that's going on in Clearwater? The truth is out there.
I'm saying it's possible.
Listen, I'm not poo-pooing your idea that it's possible. There's a lot of clever people out there. And by clever, I mean crooked and devious. So...
Degenerates, if you will.
A lot of degenerates. So this woman denied making the purchase at first. Her boyfriend believed she was either drunk or trying to exact revenge. Which are two adjectives that I try to live by. Being drunk and trying to exact revenge.
Every day. Two modes of being.
Yes, there's really, how many more could there be? Sleeping. Three.
If you're not drunk, you're trying to exact revenge.
And I'll be honest. I'm better at exacting revenge when I'm not drunk. Because I'm more calculating and vicious. Which is on my business card. Brian Neutert, talk show host, calculating, vicious. She voluntarily gave her boyfriend's card to deputies and was arrested for grand theft. So, you know, that's just a sad story. Sad, sad story. So be careful when you break up with somebody. You're not married, correct?
No, but
you have a girlfriend.
Been together for going on 7 years.
A serious relationship you are in.
Yeah.
Does your partner have access to your credit cards?
No.
No, of course not.
Because we even decided, because when you're with someone not in a non-marriage situation for a really long time,
yeah,
you start to talk about what the situation's going to be because you just kind of know, the romance is out of it. It's more like a practical
thing.
Yeah,
now it's a real relationship with real everyday issues that you have.
Right. So I was going to just take the same model that my parents had, which was they had each a separate checking account.
Okay.
Because my mom was eventually stopped working to raise me and my brothers, but for a while she was still working as a nurse. Sure. So she had her own income that went into her own checking account. My father had his own income that went into his own checking account.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And then they had a joint checking account that they would use for things like groceries, paying the bills, paying, you know, the mortgage,
yeah,
what have you, all the stuff that they both needed. But if they wanted something for themselves, like if they were going out with their pals, or if they were doing,
sure,
something else non-related to the upkeep
that the other
of the
people
house,
don't need to know nothing about.
Yeah. Or because they're both adults, if they want to buy themselves something, they can buy themselves, right, something. It's their income. But yes, they had a set, I don't remember what the amount was, but they would put a set amount every single month into the joint checking account,
okay,
for upkeep of the home. And so that way there was no, hey, you're using my credit card to do this. Maybe, right, there was once in a while like, honey, I forgot my purse, can you give me your credit card?
Right.
You're married.
Sure.
But I think it's totally reasonable and totally a good idea to remain with a certain level of financial independence.
Yes, I agree with that. That was the point of my question. You don't give your credit cards to just anybody.
Yeah.
You know?
No. I don't care if you've been together for, in your case, 30 years.
Right.
You just don't do it.
No. Listen, my wife handles all the cash.
Yeah,
whatever.
She's got all the petty cash.
She's got, well, I always have a little, yeah, you know, a little, you always got to have a little
chatter,
something, a little mad money. Little in my go bag, just in case. You got to have some mad money, just in case. You never know when you have to lamb it out of town.
True.
Always have a go bag in the trunk and a little cash.
I'm curious, what's the last thing that you impulse bought?
Ooh.
That you just bought because you were just like, you know what, I kind of want this right now.
Ooh.
And this is
that's gonna take a lot of thought. I don't usually impulse.
You're not an impulse buyer?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm always, you know, always looking, always studying, trying to decide if I want something.
Until you finally make that purchase.
I mean, you know, if I'm out, maybe I get an extra beer. That's an impulse buy.
I guess. Yeah, but that's like...
Right, that's not...
You know, that's your...
No, there's...
Sign.
No, I don't make big impulse buys.
I don't make big impulse buys. I make little ones. That's my biggest vice.
No, see, even if I always wait till I need something. I'm a big guy. I'm a big proponent of...
Need versus want.
You know, there's...
Come on, you got to want... What?
There's a lot of things I want... A lot of things I want, but there's not much I need. So I just, I honestly can't remember.
Well, that's probably a good thing.
Yeah, all right, here it is. It was a stupid shirt with bananas all over it. I saw it at Walmart, and it was like $14. But that was my big impulse buy, a $14 shirt at Walmart.
So you walk in and you see this,
and I see this powder blue shirt with bananas all over it,
and you think, "This is, you know."
I say to myself,
"Damn the torpedoes!"
Yep, and I'm like, $13.98, huh?
It's a little steep.
All right, it's a little steep.
Ralph Lauren?
Right, I don't think a shirt should cost more than $8. But you know what? Maybe this time I treat myself. Treat myself. Yeah, that's what I do. I treat myself. So that was my last impulse buy. Was the banana shirt. My 15-year ex, this from the 815, was siphoning money from my business before we broke up. I caught her, but don't know how much she siphoned. Oh, man. From the 312, breakups can be amicable if done early on when it's apparent you're not compatible. Breakups turn ugly when the relationship is dragged out despite incompatibility. I agree with that. Yeah. So that was my impulse buy, Tom. Was it what you expected? Was that story everything?
Honestly, it kind of was. I was like, Brian, I don't know if folks are looking on the video stream right now. The shirt you're wearing right now would suggest that if a nice Hawaiian came along and crossed your path, you would think about it.
Listen, I was just, during one of the newscasts, I was just looking at the summer clearance on the Tommy Bahama site because I'm a big, big Tommy Bahama. I wear a lot of Tommy Bahamas.
Santa smoking a cigar or something on the back on a beach.
I have a Christmas Tommy Bahama shirt. Sure,
you gotta.
Of course I do. I wear a lot of them. But even that, now, I would never impulse buy a full price Tommy Bahama.
No, you're going to go
for the sale. I also will not impulse buy the clearance price Tommy Bahamas, just because I'm like, I don't really need it.
See, so, I'm a sucker for DVDs. You know how much of a film head I am.
Oh, so, I should have you come to my house. I got boxes of them that I'm going to take to the secondhand store and try to sell.
I'm not really sure if I want those ones, Brian. I mean, I'd have to take.
No,
a
these
look
are
at the titles.
These aren't my private collection.
Oh.
Those are under the bed. These are. That's my private collection. Nobody goes in that. That's the locked Foot Locker. It's next to my go bag. It's all there. I've got a real small go bag and a giant Foot Locker full of special DVDs.
Special DVDs. Well, I'll come
Who
over and take a look at
that
the
on DVD.
I don't know. Maybe you want to light a few candles, put on some Sting. You know, really make
a
night
nice
of
bubble
it.
Bath. Sure.
Yeah.
Get in touch with myself. That would be fantastic. All right. What were you saying? So your impulse buy is DVDs?
I buy DVD because if I'm near a Best Buy, sometimes I'll just peek in. I'll see if they're like I dig through the bins.
Do they still sell DVDs at Best Buy?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll dig through the $5 bin because I'm just like, well, if I'm going to impulse buy something, I want it to be little.
Sure, there you
go. So if I find, oh, they got Silence of the Lambs on Blu-ray for $5.
That's a good deal.
That's great. I think that's a great deal.
That's a good
deal. That's an awesome deal. But, you know, then now and again, I'll be like, I've been good this week. Is that Ghostbusters 4K restoration? Yep.
Wow.
There it is.
And do you watch them?
Oh, 100%. I usually watch a movie a day.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Look at you.
Yeah, nothing else better to do.
Yeah, I guess that's all right. You know what I could do better? Read this weather forecast. All right, Mark Carman will be coming your way at 5 o'clock with the opening bell. People complimenting your parents' financial arrangement. Says, Tom, your mom and dad are very smart. I've been married for 36 years. We have the same arrangement, and it works. So keeping money separate and then having a joint account to keep the household running.
Mm-hmm.
So who would you hit up? Who would you hit up if you needed cash? Would you go to mom or dad?
Dad.
Dad was a little more free spending.
Well, you know, it depended on what it was.
Okay.
Usually if my mom's thing was like, I have to pay for everything myself.
Okay.
Except for books. If I was ever going to go to Borders, which I'm still a total bookworm.
Yeah.
She would be like, I will get you as many books as you like.
Oh, that's
but
nice.
You have to read them all.
Oh.
She's like, you got
to
read them all. And I did.
You have to write a report.
I didn't have to write a report. She's just like, I want to know that you read them. And she would like make sure, she'd look at the quality of the books because they would all be, you know, I'd go to Borders.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we weren't able to use the local library because we were not technically part of the city the library was in.
Wow.
It's a long story.
They kept you out of the public library?
Yeah. No, I wasn't allowed to take books out from the public library.
That's awful.
Yeah, it was a governmental thing, but anyway,
the man trying to make you illiterate.
Yeah, well, I showed him.
You showed him.
She would look at the quality of the books, and if they looked like they had clearly been read from cover to cover, and I did read them from cover to cover, she'd be like, all right, you can get some more books. But Dad would always be like, hey, you know, go have a good time. Go to the movies.
Nice.
He'd be very helpful for dates. Like, I would take girls on dates on Dad's dime.
Well, that's good, because trying to remember back to high school and dating, a lot of girls don't want to come over and have you read books to them. That's not a good date.
Yeah, no, I tried the whole sonnets thing, and she just left.
Yeah, that's creepy. You come in, you're in a beret and a striped shirt.
I'd keep saying forsooth, you know, and things like that.
Is your tooth loose? Are you okay? Forsooth.
Forsooth.
All right, it's time for some Friday feel goods as we prepare to wrap things up. These are just sweet little stories that we found. Tom found this one. I found another one. So it's this was Tom's. He's 100. She's about to turn 103, and they just got married. Newlyweds John and Phyllis Cook are celebrating their new lives together at their Ohio Senior Living Center. That is very nice. John is a World War II vet who just turned 100. Phyllis will turn 103 on August 8th, so she's robbing the cradle. She's, going for that young man. Longevity runs in Phyllis's family. Her mom lived to be 106. I can't imagine. Good for that. God bless him. I can't imagine being that old, living that long.
May I throw in an audience awe?
Yeah, sure.
Aww.
I have those ready. This is going to get sweeter. The couple went to the courthouse to get their marriage license last week and found out they could get married on the spot. It wasn't the plan, but we got here and they said, we could marry you here. I said, good, let's get it over with. That's John Cook's. When you're 100, you don't have time. You don't have time to mince around.
No.
You're going to do it right now? Fine, let's go. The story gets better because my favorite part is coming up. Anyway, they'd been dating for about a year before they tied the knot, which is nice. To tell you the truth, Phyllis said, we fell in love with each other. I know you think that may be a little bit far-fetched with somebody our age, but we fell in love with each other. They've both had two spouses in the past and feel lucky to have found love the third time. They spend their days together enjoying meals, sitting in the sun, and zipping down the halls of the Kingston residence of Sylvania in their mobility scooters. But this is my favorite part. They also give each other space. What we do, we both keep our own apartments. He's upstairs, I'm down, Phyllis said.
That's smart.
Even at 100, don't cage me in. Listen, I need my space. Because you got to figure at 100, you've got a routine down.
You've been doing it for, probably 100 years.
Yeah, you don't need your newlywed wife of 103 coming down and cramping your style. You know, you got to play canasta. You just jet around on your scooters. Sure, I don't know what you play when you're 101. It's got to be canasta, right?
Or bridge.
Maybe bridge. Maybe they just, I love the picture of them drag racing down the halls in their mobility scooters. That just to me, holding one hand and using the throttle with the other, and off they go into the sunset. That was a beautiful feel-good story.
The Fast and the Furious senior center drift.
Yeah. And by fast, you mean 3 miles an hour. Slow down! What are you, Evel Knievel? I don't think they're Evel Knievel. That is a nice story. So that's what Friday did.
It made me very happy.
It did make you happy, and I like to see you happy. This made me happy because it involves many of my favorite things. People, drinking, and injured birds. I don't know what the injured bird, not really my favorite thing. But what happened to the injured bird, my favorite thing. This is from Ogden, Utah. It's a heartwarming story of how a baby bird got to an animal rescue center. The bird showed up at the Wildlife Rehabilitation Center of Northern Utah. A volunteer texted a photo to the chairman. It was a picture of a bird, and it had come in an Uber. Not with a person, just the bird in an Uber. It was a two-week-old lesser goldfinch, which was my alias when I first started running guns. Lesser goldfinch. I don't know when I ran guns. Doesn't matter. But the baby bird did call the Uber, of course. People who found the bird and had been drinking called because they didn't want to drive. Responsible drinkers, we like that. People who love animals, we like that too. What we don't like is the first Uber driver who took off because they didn't want to transport the bird. So they were all sitting around, according to Tim Crowley, who had been enjoying his Saturday afternoon at his neighbor's house. They're sitting in some camp chairs, hanging out, he said. We were having a few drinks, and we had a visitor fall out of the sky. The bird couldn't fly, he said, so they couldn't figure out where it came from. Couldn't tell if there was a nest in the tree. So they texted a photo of the bird to the Wildlife Rehabilitation Center. And the people said, well, you need to bring that bird to us right away. But because they'd been drinking, they couldn't do it. So they didn't know. They were like, well, maybe all the friends, imagine you're sitting around with your friends, and all the friends start going, well, maybe we should just call an Uber. So that's what they did. They called an Uber. They sent the bird. The rehabilitation center said if the bird had not arrived within another half hour, it would not have made it. The bird is doing fine. The people are doing fine. Everyone in this story has a happy ending.
Aww.
That's right. That's how we end it. On an up note, we'll do this, and then we'll say goodbye. Well, it has been a joy, Tom, being with you the last two mornings. I've really enjoyed it, so thank you for having me. Thank you for all your work. Thank you for listening and being part of the programs the last couple mornings. Nick will be back with you on Monday. Movie reviews will be there. Midsummer is the big one we're looking forward to.
Yep, and a little bit of Spider-Man
and some
as well.
Spider-Man. That'll be fun. It'll be a nice mix. So that'll be Monday when Nick comes back. Mark Carman comes your way on the other side of the news. He's got the opening bell, and then it's the morning show right here. Okay, Chicago stories told 24/7 on 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users, just say play WGN radio on TuneIn.